Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guy. It's going to be a great day to get out and about, get some stuff done, and get to your locally owned garden center. Morning, Tony.
Morning, Ernie. How are you?
Dandy. How about you?
I like that. Dandy.
Yes.
Not as dandy as you.
Well.
No, I am. I'm doing well. Thank you, by the way.
Awesome.
So, what do you think all of a sudden we go from one extreme to the other? The weather's been nice. We always start out this program talking about the weather, where we've been, where we're headed. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's pretty complicated. There's a big, beautiful full moon. If you're up early and get a chance to get out and about outside, take a second and look up. It's just beautiful. Clear skies. Going to be a gorgeous couple of days. Again, a high of only 83 today. Very low humidity. Overnight low will be 60. Much the same for tomorrow, high temperature in the low 80s, and then increased chance of showers by Tuesday afternoon. We may see a pop-up shower late Monday, but It's expected to be just beautiful. And that's pretty much where we are here in the tri-state, or as a lot of people look at, it's the Ohio Valley, and that's why our weather fluctuates so drastically.
Is that why?
I don't know.
Because
I'm making it up.
The valley effect?
Yeah.
The valley girl effect? Got it. You know, you're right, though. The moon was beautiful this morning, and Right underneath it, the red planet.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not? I'm not into astronomy, but I understand. Is it at its closest point to the Earth right now?
Then it will be in our lifetime, I think.
Our lifetime?
Yeah.
Really attractively.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was referred to by a couple of people as the blood moon. And then there was a lunar eclipse, the longest lunar eclipse in 35 years, I think. But we weren't able to see it here. It occurred on the other side of the world, I guess. Mm. But it's just been spectacular. This week has just been picture perfect. Mm-hmm. Now, Lisa and I talk about that. We've been doing a lot of work around the back part of the patio and stuff. We have some family members coming in for a funeral this weekend. And just when we take a break and go, okay, you know, it's wonderful, let's just sit down for a little bit. The first thing out of one of our mouths would be, wow, is it beautiful? Golly. You know, the other day, there was just such a wonderful little breeze blowing through.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome just to sit on the porch for a while.
It's pretty nice. You know, we're in the low 80s, and I think going into next week, hopefully we get a little bit more rain, too. Mm-hmm. That was a nice rainfall we had the other day.
It was.
You talk about something needed. In the worst way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice steady rain. So you could see things dramatically turned around.
Right.
Because they're right before that. We were talking, we were very serious about, you know, how dry it was getting and various things like that. And I was at someone's house the other day taking a look at their arborvitae that are turning brown or getting dry. And given the rain, it was still dry where they were planted. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly dry. I was really surprised. But they were around large trees as well. We talk about that all the time. The large root systems of those heritage trees, you know, they take that water and they take all that moisture away from other things surrounding it. So you got to keep an eye on some of those types of shrubs and various plants and so forth that are underneath or around large trees. However, this was a very interesting thing, and this is so important, and I'm not ready to get into this discussion or topic, but these particular arborvitae, they were planted high. They were out of the ground like 2 to 3 inches almost. So much of the root system was exposed up top. I was really surprised they still had a relative amount of green in them, but you could tell they were dry.
Mm.
And I was like, stud, you got to really get on this and water. Really, really do. And, you know, it's unfortunate sometimes, you know, in the garden center world, we all do our best to hand out like planting guides or planting instructions. And, you know, I was just really taken by what I saw. But going back to what we were just discussing a moment ago, although we had that rain, I still think it's relatively on the dry side.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And I was trying to get an idea where we were with total rainfall this year or just for the month of July. I still think we're off. But when it comes at one time like that and, you know, you go those long periods in between, that's tough.
Yeah.
You know, that's like running a marathon and not having an ability to like sip on water, you know, while you're trying to do that or if you're playing a sport of some sort. You know, at halftime, you get to take a break, maybe a little Gatorade or Powerade.
Right.
You know, there's none of that in between. It's always all or none.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets really, really tough.
Yep. It helped my newly planted grass, which mm-hmm. we'll post some pictures in just a little bit. Remember, I was asking you where we cleaned up the old wood pile. We had a big bare spot there. So one of the things we wanted to do is put some grass down, and you advised us it was going to be a little difficult in the middle of the summer, but following your guidelines and keeping it watered in, I was stunned how much grass came up, how much it covered the bare spots, and how healthy it appears. We'll post those pictures on our Facebook page.
You need to take me through that process. You know, it's not an impossible task
mm-hmm.
to do that in the summer. However, you know, the fall is the best time. We're going to talk about that as well.
Right.
But, you know, if you stay on top of it, I mean, obviously summer is the least desirable time to try and sow grass seed. But if you're in that situation and you have to do it, guess what? You have to do it.
I'll walk you through that when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And before we went into the break, we're talking a little bit about the new grass at our house. And Tony gave me some great advice. I followed his instructions step by step and had huge success right in the middle of the summer. And one of the things that we had is, you know, we have a couple of wood-burning fireplaces. We had a huge pile of firewood back there that needed to be cut and split and stacked. And once we finally got all of that done, it was time to clean it up. So I talked to Tony about it. I said, well, I know it's, you know, probably not the ideal time to plant grass, but we have some people coming in. We want to get some grass started. And he said, well, you know, there's a couple of things you got to make sure you do is you got to make sure you have some topsoil down there, because where the firewood was, it killed everything. And there was even a little bit of dense grade there where we were working around that fire pit area. So I ran down to pick up a couple of truckloads of topsoil, as he advised, and spent 2 or 3 days just spreading it out. About 3 inches is what you told me I needed to get down on the ground there.
Well, at least.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And so once we got that in, and then we took a hard rake to some of the other areas that we didn't cover with topsoil, and then went down to see Tony down at the garden center, and he pulled out a couple of different grass seeds and did a special blend. Tell me a little bit about that.
It wasn't anything difficult there.
Well, I was giving you credit.
Well, yeah, but actually, it you know, my go-to tall fescue turf is Fine Lawn H2O, which used to be, I mean, for those that remember Fine Lawn from the day, it used to be Fine Lawn 5GL.
Mm-hmm.
Then there for a while, it was kind of shelved. I don't know what really happened to it. And then it came out and it's Fine Lawn. It was Fine Lawn Elite. And it was that for a period of time. And now it's Fine Lawn H2O from Central Farm and Garden. And it's one of my go-to tall fescues all the time. Now it has water conservation certification. So with that, you know, it's going to require less maintenance from a watering standpoint mm-hmm. once it gets established and so forth from this point on. What I did, I mixed it with a little bit of a perennial rye called Double Play. And Double Play rye is relatively new, great color to it, durability, a nice look. And I always encourage people to throw a little bit of rye in there, at least, you know, around 10%,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're on a hillside,
right?
You know, from that standpoint, because rye is one of the turfs that, one of the types of grass that will germinate faster than, you know, most others that, you know, we typically use the tall fescues. And if you're on a hillside or a little bit of a slope of any sort, you know, it gets up quicker than the other turf, like I said, and it kind of helps hold it into play.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not far from renovating or revamping our lawns. We'll talk about that a little bit this morning, too, in a bit. But what else we do, we're fortunate enough we have 3 large walk-in coolers. So the seed that I brought out for you was around 40 degrees. You know, we keep it in the upper 30s, around 40 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So that seed is cool. And once it hits that warm soil temperature, bam, it's there.
Right.
So, but you did your due diligence as well. You know, you prepped that area. You did what you needed to do. You also, what was important, we talked about using straw as coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people think the straw, the purpose of it is to keep the birds out of the seed. No, it's they have to eat an awful lot of seed. It's not much of a meal.
Right. You know,
it takes a lot of seed. But the purpose of the straw is to help with moisture retention.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put that down, a lot of people have the tendency, Ernie, from what I've seen in the past, to really layer it too thick. And we discussed, you know, you want about a 40 to 50% coverage ratio,
mm-hmm.
because I want you to be able to look down at the soil surface and see some soil,
right?
You know, not just straw. I want you to be able to see through it. And therefore, that allows a lot of moisture to get through rather easily, light and air. And that's what makes all that germination process come into play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what doesn't take, how much of that percentage wise do you think really took?
I would say almost all of it. I mean, if you're going to make me
use a number,
I would say 97%, because there are only just a few small areas that we didn't get anything in. That, as you mentioned, might have washed, might not have gotten covered. The other thing that we took advantage of is, because this was right in that period of time where it was brutally hot, very dry, hadn't had any rain for a long time. And you said we had to keep it watered. So, you know, Lisa would get up early in the morning and then turn the sprinklers on, give it a good long drink. And then after that brutally hot day, do the same thing toward the latter part of the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And did that for about a week or 2 weeks. And then I was stunned when she walked in and said, "We got grass coming up." I said, "Well, can't happen that quickly." And sure enough, I walked out the edge of the patio and there it was. Mm-hmm.
You know, typically a tall fescue will germinate around, you know, the 10 to 14 day range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, it's all dependent upon the soil temperatures and so forth. When I say that, you know, as we get late in the year when you sow grass seed, or when you do it really early in the spring, late winter, early spring, you know, it's what really makes that happen. But, you know, that's great that you had that good success with it. Like I said, you know, fall's the ideal opportunity to, you know, renovate a lawn or sow grass seed. And then winter seeding, then spring, and then, again, least desirable, but it can be done if you stay with it like you did, or I should say like Lisa did. You know, you can have a great deal of success, and then usually what doesn't really come in or take hold for you, that's when we turn the corner, you know, right there at the beginning of September, and just go at some of those little troubled spots again, and you should see a huge difference next spring.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and while we're talking about, you know, lawn renovation, the fall is the best time to do it. And I know we're just nearing the end of July, and you might be thinking, wow, they're already talking about lawn renovation. The reason why I'm bringing it up is because once we get into August, you know, that's the time you need to start planning out what you're going to do as far as getting rid of some things that are plaguing you in the lawn, you know, being ready to turn the corner right in the beginning of September and sow grass seed. So we have the best time headed our way, the whole month of August, to get that all in play. And I know we're going to hear from people. I'm going to talk to people in the garden center that's going to be trying to get things in play in October. And I'm unfortunately have to say, you're pushing the envelope.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can get this out there, and that's our job to preach when it's the best time to do it. But the fall lawn renovation, when I listen to this, class out at Boone County, the Extension Office, is taking place Tuesday, August 28th from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. So you can contact the Boone County Extension, a great resource there, a great place to go and get the information that you need other than listening to what we talk about on the radio if you need to do any fall lawn renovation. You know, August is the time to plan it out and think about it. And be ready to do it right there at the beginning of September. And you'll be right in sync.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're going to post those pictures up on our Facebook page in just a few minutes so you can get a chance to see the progress we made on the grass. It was fantastic.
You don't need to gloat about that, Ernie. You don't need to pat yourself on the back.
I wasn't patting myself on the back.
It was all Lisa. Pat Lisa on the back. No, it's all good. You know, but you had had a question, too, and we'll talk about it when we come back.
Yep.
When do you mow?
Right. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking about some of the grass that we got planted and had tremendous success at the house trying to cover up a big bare spot. And I sent a message to Tony, you know, the grass had been up maybe about 2 or 3 weeks. And so Lisa wanted me to get the mower out and cut the grass before our friends arrived this weekend. And I said, no, I don't know. I probably shouldn't do that. So I sent a message to Tony. And he said, no, you got to wait until the grass is about 4 inches.
Yeah, I usually wait until it's around 4 inches where I can mow it and just barely take off a third max of that new growth. And that really starts to set it up and it starts to harden it off. And, you know, you don't want to do it when it's too young or too low, and don't scalp it. Always, you know, like I told you in the text message, you know, set your mower on the highest setting or a second to the highest setting. And really, this is important too. Refrain from trying to rake out any of the straw that's still in there.
Oh, yeah.
Because what you're more than likely to do is as you're raking, that tender grass is still trying to get rooted in. And, if, you know, they're still relatively shallow. So you can pull out what's already started to root in.
Right.
So do not do that. Sometimes I'll encourage people, that's when you might want to put your bag attachment onto your mower and just whatever gets sucked up into the bag, leave it be.
Right.
And don't feel compelled or adamant to rake that out.
No.
Let it get rooted in.
Sure.
All right.
All right.
Clear?
Clear. Clear as a bell.
And I, you know, I'm not a big proponent or supporter of fertilizing in the summer. Unless you're using Milorganite, and that's becoming tough to find. So refrain from using anything like, you know, any type of fertilizers right now.
Right.
Even if you use a starter fertilizer, I just would wait till we get towards the fall when we start getting into the three-step program. And I think you'll be fine.
Okay.
But, you know, again, as I said about fertilizing your lawn, I've had a lot of people come in to the garden center and say, hey, what can I put on my lawn right now? And my question or my, well, my response is, boy, I like to, if you're going to do anything, it, you know, it, please water, but I really like Milorganite. It's goof proof. It's non-burning. It's low in nitrogen, has an element of iron in it within it as you fertilize, you know, it helps green up the lawn. And there's a, you know, there's a supply issue right here. I don't think they're able to bag enough of it as quickly as they would like to. It seems as if there's the, you know, the demand is growing, obviously, for Milorganite. It's you know, it's gaining popularity. And, you know, a lot of the golf courses, Ernie, are using Milorganite.
Oh, really?
So it's organic. It also has an interesting element about it that there are people that will tell me they find that it's a great deer deterrent as well.
Wow.
You know, you ever hear any, you don't have any deer issues, do you?
Not issues. You know, we still have some, some that come by and visit now and then. We don't consider those issues.
Well, you know, I know I hear people all the time. They will say they're coming right up to the porch or they're coming right up to the deck and are just going to town on stuff. But, you know, I always say this, I preach this, use some of those deer products. You know, Liquid Fence, Deer Scram. I know that Deer Scram, it works very effective. It's very effective. I know it works well. I've used it. You got to stay on top of it. And the beauty of that is, I say this all the time, it's guaranteed. What more would you want to ask for?
What could you ask for?
Hold on to that receipt. You bring it back to the garden center and you say, hey, Tony, or whomever, wherever you bought it from, I'm not satisfied. Are you sure you used it? No, I'm just kidding you. But we'll either replace that or give you your money back. That's how they want us to handle it. So, you know, always a good thing to do. And what else is going on, Ernie? How's the summer been treating you?
Really nice. Getting a lot done there around the house, and we're really hoping that all these things can be wrapped up pretty quickly and then spend a little time out on the bike or just out, you know, finding a lake to go to.
You know, I've been getting a couple of things done, and one of those things, I talked to our good friend Jason from Herman Services. I'm not sure if they're in next week or the following week. I had reached out to him. He told me what to pick up for my frost-free, you know, my spigot on the outside. It was the Woodford RK, I think, 25 kit. So I still got to shut everything off and install that. He told me it might be a little difficult to get some of the pieces off the old parts there. I know it's about, how old is that? It's however long I've been in the house, 23, 24 years.
Wow.
But I'm looking forward to talking with Jason. But I've been doing some things around the house. I need to do it. You know, something I want to bring up are, do you have relatively new windows by chance? Or What type of windows do you have?
I have no idea. No, they're not new.
No. Well, no. A few years ago, it's almost been maybe 14, 15 years, we put in Anderson windows.
Mm-hmm.
One of the operator arms on one of the casement, the crank system, the casement, the operator arm.
Right.
Kind of got stripped. It's one of those things. Tina's like, it just happened.
I don't know.
It just happened. But it was really easy to get that apart. And you know what? On every part of theirs, there's a part number, which makes it so easy to go to their website and order that part. Now, I went to my local lumber yard, Kelly Brothers. Great guys. That's where I got the windows from when we did the windows. And I did check with them first. And their price was the same as it is online, buying it from Anderson. Uh-huh. But I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that it just made it simple, and you turned it over. Even the manufacturer date was on that operator arm.
Wow.
I was surprised. Four of three of 2002. That's going back some time.
Yeah.
But I didn't know I never knew if you ever fooled with windows. You don't look like a window kind of guy to me.
No.
Except to clean them, maybe. But other than that, I've been just doing some of those maintenance kind of things around the house. Mm-hmm. The other day I had a lot of debris up in the gutters. It's just trying to find something to do when I get the moment to do it.
Right.
And then I'm trying to get out on the golf course a little bit, which we're supposed to on the 17th.
August 17th.
Are we paired up on that round?
Yeah.
You're making sure of that?
I am.
Good.
Got that all taken care of.
You got it all taken care of.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I have to pause for a moment. And when we come back?
A good buddy stopped by the garden center yesterday, J.D. Varvel from down in Aberdeen, Ohio. He's one of our listeners. And I got to tell you a little funny story because my wife is asking me questions last night. How do you know this guy?
Right.
Well, he stopped in a store, and I'll kind of shed some light on that and what we talked about.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony had a visitor to the garden center and you're going to share a little story with us. I can't wait to hear this.
Well, no, it's interesting. And that, this has been one of the pleasant surprises of working at the radio station and being on the air here at B105 in and around the house. Some of the people that I've met, it just had become friends to a degree,
mm-hmm.
and been very fortunate. And I can't say enough. It's priceless. You can't put a price on it. But yesterday, a friend, kind of a friend, a listener,
mm-hmm.
that I've been in touch with off and on the phone talking about various things. J.D. Varvel, he's from Aberdeen, Ohio, which is really, it's right across from Maysville, if that gives you an idea. But our signal goes pretty far, Ernie.
Yes, it does.
But J.D. stopped in the store yesterday, and my Tina came back, my wife, and she goes, there's a guy, says, a good old friend of yours, J.D. Varvel's here. I said, really? So I walked out to the front, and there, J.D. was, and he stopped in, and we're going to talk about this, too. He wanted to pick up some dimension. We're talking about that, getting that second application down for weed prevention in your landscape beds. But J.D. and I had an interesting conversation. We were talking about pruning conifers. And before I go there, anyway, last night, Tina's asking me, he's a good old boy. And he said, we're supposed to go down there and they're going to take us out to dinner. I said, yeah, he's been inviting us to come down a couple different times.
Right.
She goes, how do you know him? I said, well, he called up the radio station
a couple years ago,
mm-hmm. listened to the show, and he had an issue with his turf, his lawn, and said he had some things in it. He really wasn't sure what was in it and so forth. And I said, well, J.D., if I can ever meet you, or if you're ever up this way, I'd be more than happy to take a sample out to the, Boone County Extension, and
mm-hmm.
we'll get it identified. And he goes, well, I'll tell you what, Tony, as a matter of fact, I'm coming up this weekend to meet a couple friends. We're going to go to the Reds game. I said, perfect. I said, I can meet you. He goes, well, how about McDonald's right there on AA Highway? So I told Tina, I met this guy at McDonald's. And she goes, did you have lunch? I said, no, I just met him in the parking lot. We shook hands, talked to one another. He gave me his soil samples or his turf samples.
Right.
And I said, From there is where it started. Yeah. It went from there. And she just shook her head. She's like, are you kidding me? And I said, no. So, yeah, that's what's really been pleasing about being a part of the show and the industry in itself, you know.
Right.
It's so rewarding. But JD stopped by yesterday and he's like, Tony, I got some gold tip junipers. And I think they were camassiferous. They're gold mops or gold threads. And he's asking about pruning. And I was like, well, JD, how do they look? And he's like, well, they're beautiful. You know, they're gold and, you know, all this good stuff. And he said, I've been pruning in them. And I'm like, well, you know, back off that a little bit. And I said, you know, if they look good, you know, it's like a car. If it's running well or a piece of machinery, if everything's, you know, oiled and going well, leave it alone, mm-hmm. you know. But we were talking about conifers, pruning conifers and when to prune conifers and various things. And this is one of the most, I can't say it's one of the most commonly asked questions. I think a lot of people are a little apprehensive about pruning conifers. And I think there's a lot of people out there that really never have pruned conifers that can really give you a lot of insight as to what to expect. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that no one's ever done it, but it's not an easy thing to find good information on sometimes. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to pruning conifers too, I just want to point this out. You really shouldn't have to, you know, provided they're in the right place, because let them take on their natural growth, you know, habit or look and so forth, their appearance. You better have a daggone good darn reason to prune a conifer, okay? I just, you know.
Like what? I mean, what would be a good reason?
Well, you know, if you're experiencing some tip dieback or some mm-hmm. insect issues, okay. If something's died or damaged or diseased, then, you know, those are the three Ds of pruning. And a lot of times, if obviously something will outgrow the space that it's in, and maybe it might be restricting access to the front door, getting around the walkway.
Right.
Or when you pull into your driveway, your car's brushing up against it. Or it's up against the house. It's too close. It's those kind of things. And, you know, just arborvitae in particular. You know, we're all familiar with the arborvitae. There's the Western arborvitae, Green Giant. Also, there's Spring Grove. There's the Emerald Green, the regular Smarguard. Arborvitae, you know, people ask me sometimes, when do you prune those? Well, when you prune those, you got to be a little diligent about it. And, you know, I like to do it when they're pushing new growth late spring, going into the early part of summer. You know, and it's a light pruning. And a lot of times you'll see where arborvitae get brown on the inside. As long as the outside is nice and healthy and green, you know, that's fine. You can prune it lightly or shear it lightly. Mm-hmm. But don't go into it deep. Once you get into that wood or you know, down below underneath the green, a lot of times things don't respond too favorably. Oddly enough, I've seen deer have their way with arborvitae. Sometimes you don't even have to prune them yourself. And you just see this green ball on the top, and the rest of it's just been, you know, chewed on so bad. And I've seen arborvitae respond favorably, give it, you know, believe it or not. But you certainly don't want deer problems with arborvitae. But if you're looking to do any type of pruning, postpone it. Don't do it now. Especially don't do pruning when it comes to conifers going into the late fall, winter months, because, you know, where you make that prune cut, they can lose moisture. They can, you know, it's just mm-hmm. not a good situation to put them in, or right. you might get a hard frost or a freeze, and it's just not good. Junipers, you know, pretty much the same. You know, I like to do that when we're pushing new growth, again, late spring, early summer. And, you know, the camassiferous, you know, it's the gold mops, the gold threads and so forth. Some of those guys, you know, same way, late spring, early summer. And don't go back too far into some of these conifers. When you do, you get into trouble, and a lot of times things don't really respond favorably. Some of the flat needle type of evergreens, the hemlocks and the yews and so forth. You know, hemlocks, you know, when they're dormant late winter going into the or late summer, you can prune those lightly. And just, you know, just the outermost growth using hand pruners or head shears is all I want to say. So just be diligent about how you're working with some of the conifers. Don't go in them too deep. And really have a reason to do it. You really shouldn't have to prune conifers. Allow them to take on their natural shape and growth habit, if at all possible.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment when we come back.
You know, let's talk about, you know, we're talking about various things. I've had people, I'm going to talk about some of the questions we've gotten on Facebook and some of our emails. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to let that lead us into the anatomy of a weed, because we're going to need to start getting rid of some things as we turn the corner and go into the fall season. The anatomy of some weeds, what they are, what you're going to do, what you're going to expect, and then when can you sow grass seed.
Gotcha. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Great way to stay connected with us, too, is on our Facebook page. And Tony was talking a little bit before we went into the break about we have to get ready to start getting rid of some, I guess, troublesome spots.
Right. And we had a question from Scott, and his question was, it's been hot and dry this summer, and he's traveling a lot, and he really doesn't have a lot of opportunity to work on his lawn or, you know, keep it into shape. And he said everything's pretty much gone dormant. That can be expected with as dry as it has been, mm-hmm. Prior to us getting a little bit of rain last weekend. And he said the dreaded crabgrass is now pretty much the mainstay of his lawn. And boy, crabgrass, it can take over. It can be quite gnarly looking. And the thing about crabgrass is this: at this point in time, you know, it thrives in these conditions, these hot, you know, humid days, you know, warm temperatures and so forth. And if you can get it some moisture, even better, you know, just it's like an explosion. And that's what we're trying to prevent when we put down the first of the 3-step program from Fertiloom with prodiamine. You know, we're trying to prevent crabgrass from germinating, you know, right there sometime in the month of May, late April sometimes, mm-hmm. going into May, you know, when the soil temperatures warm up well enough, where the seed from the prior season germinates. Crabgrass, it relies on reseeding. And eventually, as we progress and go into the late fall and winter months, crabgrass dies out. That's the good thing about it.
Yeah.
So that's why we're trying to follow up the following season with a pre-emergent. And we do that in the middle of March, you know, sometime through the middle, latter part of April, before crabgrass starts to germinate. So that's kind of like the life cycle of crabgrass. It relies on seeding. However, you know, Scott, if you want to go after it, there's a couple of things that you can do. There's a couple of products that you can use. MSMA was taken off the market a few years ago, and in its place is now quinclorac. Quinclorac, I have found to be, and that's usually in most of your crabgrass killers today, to be somewhat effective. Okay. However, I don't find it as effective on older, more established, mature crabgrass as it is when it's relatively new and still in a young stage as it's developing and growing.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you catch it at that point in time, you know, just a general crabgrass killer with quinclorac will be suitable. Now, if you're really going to go after it and it's further along, further developed, and, you know, pretty much established, which most of it is right now at this point in time, I would look for a product that has phenoxyprop in it. And we don't talk about this particular company or product often, but what I have found, Bayer has a good crabgrass killer with phenoxyprop. That's the one I've had the best success with established and older, mature crabgrass. That's my experience, and that's what I want to pass along to Scott. And then my next question, Scott, was, okay, if in fact you take care of the crabgrass issue, what is your next plan of attack? So, and that's getting rid of things in the month of August. You know, even if you go after things with a selective herbicide, and when we talk about selective herbicides, we're talking about herbicides that will selectively go after what it is you're spraying in the lawn, be it a weedy grass or, you know, a broadleaf weed, and not injuring or, you know, hurting the turf. If you do it with a non-selective product like kills all or Roundup, glyphosate, you're going to kill whatever it gets on or at least injure it, and it will also injure the turf. So have a plan in play as to when you get rid of some of these weeds that are plaguing you in a lawn as you're renovating it, you know, be ready to turn a corner in the beginning of September mm-hmm. and sow grass seed. So that was my suggestion to Scott. And then we also had one of your favorites, Ernie. Linda, she's talking about her backyard is full of creeping Charlie. Is there any way to get rid of it, do they just need to kill off the backyard and reseed? And what is the best grass seed to use? Well, the best one of the best grass seeds to use, we'll start there, is Fine Lawn H2O. And, you know, I like to mix it with a little bit of perennial rye, double play. So any type of tall fescue would be the type of grass seed that I would sow once you get rid of the problem. Now, creeping Charlie, common ground cover, is a little tricky to eradicate. It's difficult, and a lot of people will wave the white towel. I don't know where you are in your grand scheme of things in your lawn. I know that you used to have a fair amount of it.
I did.
Do you still, or is it?
No. Last couple of times we've treated it, we've had a little bit of success there.
Good. My response to Linda was, you know, there's two times throughout the course of the season I feel that's best to go after creeping Charlie, and that is in the spring when it's blooming, and when it's blooming, it's exerting a lot of energy, so it's trying to reproduce, and it's vulnerable at that time, and I like to use Fertilume's weed-free zone when I'm going after it at that particular time in the spring, you know, provided that I still have more turf than I do creeping Charlie, because I want to be selective about my approach.
Right.
I don't want to kill off all my grass. I just want to get rid of that little bit of creeping Charlie. Now, this is where you need to determine what method or approach that you take to get rid of things like this. I always say if you have at least 50% turf or greater, use something selective, meaning it's only going to kill or get rid of what you're spraying, and it will not injure the turf. If it's less than that, then I'm more apt to use something that's non-selective, like Killzar Roundup, and just get rid of everything and then reseed.
Uh-huh.
So that's what determines what product or how I approach getting rid of it. So going back to the second best time to get rid of Creeping Charlie is usually in the late fall. As it starts to translocate all of its energy down into the root system so it can go through another winter, when you spray it with Fertilume's weed-free zone, what it does, it gets into the plant a lot more efficiently as it's translocating its energy downward into the root system to go through the next upcoming winter, and you're more effective and efficient at getting rid of it, or at least most of it, and then come back and go at it a second time, if necessary, in the spring or a few weeks later.
Right. Sometimes you just got to wipe the slate clean.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Lindy, that was my suggestion there with the Creeping Charlie. It really plagues a lot of people, and it's only a weed if you don't want it there, right, Ernie?
That's exactly right.
That's right.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I have to pause for a moment when we come back. A
couple more questions that we had on Facebook and our email, and we'll finish up with that, and we'll go on to
the weeds.
Understanding weed life cycles.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And as I mentioned before, a great way to stay connected with us is our Facebook page. Look us up and like us. You can post pictures and post questions. And Tony is responding to a couple of those that we got in the last week.
Yeah, you know, the next one is from Melanie. And this is really an interesting situation. She's had some serious issues in mole activity in her backyard. And apparently there's a lot of unevenness, a lot of holes and various things, and she has a great deal of concern. She was telling me that her little ones are not far from learning how to walk and so forth, and she's afraid as they get older and they start walking and playing in the backyard that they might perhaps, you know, fall or twist her ankle or anything of the sort. And how would I handle it? What would I do to try and get things back into shape or get it even and somewhat level? And I usually do not recommend this, but here's what this would be my approach to it, because I know if you have a lot of mole activity and if it's really severe, it does change the dynamics of the surface of the soil. It really does. And it's not as easy to walk on. And she's certainly right about that. You know, at that point in time, you know, if I need to bring some additional topsoil in, I will do that, but I will also spread it out evenly. And this is what I really do not recommend to most people, because I'm not in favor of doing this unless you absolutely have to. Mm-hmm. And that is using a roller type of mechanism to roll the ground out flat. And you used to see people do that all the time years ago. Do you remember
that? Yeah, sure did.
I used to see people take old hot water tanks and fill them with concrete and rig them up in such a way they would pull them behind their like mowing lawnmower, their tractor mower. But I usually don't recommend this because of soil compaction. But what I was explaining to Melanie is I would certainly bring in some soil, level it out. I would roll it. And there shortly, you know, immediately after, I would water and then I would core aerate it where I could open that ground back up after rolling it. And I think that that should really play in her favor. And at that same time, I would sow grass seed. And I think that will help tremendously. So that's a very interesting situation to find yourself in.
Yeah.
And there were times, you know, where I've seen mold damage that was so excessive that, yeah, you have to roll that out somewhat.
Sure.
You know, you got to bring things back into play. So, you know, it's just one of those things. You know, also, our good buddy posted some photos, his daughter, Denny the Birdman.
I saw that. Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
How you like his commode planner?
Depending on where you are, that's art. Some of your other neighbors might not appreciate it much.
Yeah,
that's, but anything can be turned into a planter these days. Isn't that cool?
Absolutely. And his daughter always will share some photographs with us and so forth. And thanks, Denny, for doing that. It's always funny and fun to see this kind of thing.
Sure.
And also, had a question from Patty about a maple tree. This is really an interesting situation because a few weeks ago, we were talking to Ron Rothaus, Jr. from the Arbor Doctor, and we were talking about various things that happen as a result of prolonged drought and so forth, and how trees respond. And typically, you don't see that response to being stressed out as a result of drought for a period of time until, you know, 2 or 3 years later, or what have you. It could be a number of things. It's really hard to diagnose those situations. But Patty sent us an email, and she says she has a maple tree. It was planted like 3 or 4 years ago. And what has happened to it, the center of it is dying out. And the photograph that she sent us, it's incredible of what's happening to this tree. And this is one of those situations where I pointed out to her, I would definitely call either Dave Stang or, you know, Ron Rothaus, the arbor doctor, to take a look at this tree. But a lot of times, too, in addition to drought and various things that might come into play, it's really hard to find the root of the problem, no pun intended.
Right.
But a lot of times, too, some trees can suffer from various funguses that can enter into the root system, verticillium wilt, and that can get in there and block the water passages that go up through the tree. And as a result, sometimes where there isn't water, sufficient water or nutrients getting into those branches, you'll start seeing those branches die back, you know, and again, I'm not an arborist, but you know, those are things that might be the factor of what's going on, and it may not. And that's when you need to call in an arborist and have them check that out. But certainly, you know, like you said a moment ago, a great way to stay in touch with us is on Facebook or through email. Mm-hmm. And if I don't get back to you right away, I certainly will at some point in time.
Yeah.
And obviously, I've said this before, if I don't know, we know enough people in the industry that can certainly shed some light on things and get you pointed into the right direction. That's for sure.
You know, something else that I wanted to bring up not long ago, I guess it was maybe 2 years ago when we stopped and visited our friend up at Ed's Feed and Seed, and I bought one of those peanut rings that he sells up there for birds. Love it, love it, love it. And the problem that we had with it is where we hung it out with the rest of the bird feeders, the squirrels just would raid it. Every time you'd fill it up, it'd be empty within a day or two, and you would just see squirrel after squirrel out there munching on them, and very rarely did the blue jays get a chance to feed on them. Well, there's another one that feeds off of there. Oh, can't think of what it is now. Maybe the tufted titmouse, the small bird. So I had the idea when we were doing that work out in the yard, well, I'm going to move it up on the porch. Maybe the blue jays would get a little more comfortable with us and would eventually visit with it. It probably took about 3 or 4 days. And then, sure enough, the first blue jay got up the courage to come to it while it was on the porch. And Lisa and I are sitting in our rockers, not 4 feet from it. and apprehensive at first, and then flew away. I came back, grabbed a peanut, took off, and then one by one, they just got really comfortable with it. And we absolutely loved that thing. So I posted a little video on my personal page, and I must have had 8 or 9 friends contact me and ask me where I got that. Said, I love that. What a great way to get close to the birds. And the funny thing, and Denny will appreciate this, the guess the little, and I hope I've got this right, Bert. I'll have to check with Lisa. I believe it's the tufted titmouse that comes there, and it will peck a hole in the peanut shell and take the peanut out and leave the shell in the peanut ring. Well, when the Blue Jays come by,
they take the whole thing.
They take the whole thing.
Oh, they're bullies.
And,
yeah.
And what is funny is you can see or sense disgust from the Blue Jay when it pulls one of those out of the seed after wrestling with it for a while out of the ring, and they know it's empty. Throw it down on the ground.
They bring it back and throw it
No, they throw it right on the ground.
There you go,
right where they are. We have Denny, our friend, the Birdman, online. Hey, Denny. How are you?
I'm good. Yourself?
Doing great. I was just talking about the Blue Jays visiting the peanut ring that we have. We moved it from the bird feeder post out in the yard to the porch. And
right.
The Blue Jays have gotten very comfortable with coming and getting peanuts out of it. And I think, is it the tufted titmouse that also comes to those things? And it's a small bird.
A little gray bird?
Yeah.
With a little tuft on his head?
Yes.
Like a gray cardinal.
Like a little, yeah, that's exactly right. Much smaller than the cardinal, but it's got that little crown on it.
Yeah, and, a little gray cardinal is what they call them sometimes, and it's a tufted titmouse, like you said.
Yeah.
And they will get the peanut without the shell. So, the tufted titmouse and the little chickadee and stuff will take the meat out of the shell and leave the shell.
Yeah. And then when the Blue Jays come and they wrestle that empty shell out of the peanut ring, you could just, as I was telling Tony, you could sense frustration from them when they throw that empty one down and then have to work to get another one out.
Isn't nature wonderful?
It is. It is, and we counted at one point there were two of them on the ring, two of them on the handrail, and three of them up in the tree waiting to get to it. All within about a half an hour.
Yep. You know what you call the group of Blue Jays?
I do not.
They're called a party.
A party?
A party of Blue Jays. That's what they're called.
Well, it was a party at our house with them.
It always sounds like you're having a big old party when they're screeching and squawking and all that kind of stuff.
You know, that's a good one there, Denny, because there's always various names for a group of animals together. So with the Blue Jays, it's a party, right?
Right,
right.
A flock
right.
of seagulls and various
a things. Gaggle of geese.
A gaggle of geese.
Yeah, it's a parliament of owls.
Mm. Oh, there you go. Yeah, parliament of owls. I've heard that before.
Stuff, so. Yeah, now to get to what I want to talk about.
Okay.
I've got a mother-in-law's tongue plant.
Uh-huh.
And I've got it in a container. It's like, I don't know, maybe 14 inches in diameter. And this thing is completely full of this mother-in-law's plant. Is there any way I can split that and put it in another container?
Oh, easily. Absolutely. Sansevieria is a wonderful plant. And obviously, it needs divided. And, easy to do. You know, is it in a plastic pot by chance, or what type of container is it in right now?
It's in a plastic container, about 14-inch diameter container.
Got it.
It's got little yellow stalks of flowers around the edges right now, so it's in bloom.
No, go ahead and divide it. Great plant. My uncle, Tony, used to collect those various varieties and cultivars. He loved that plant. And, you know, it's hence the name, mother-in-law's tongue. I mean, they're hard to kill. Anything you can do is overwater that, and then you're in trouble.
Well, I won't even be able to do that, it looks like. I set it outside every summer and stuff like that. But, you know, and these things are, I guess, maybe 2, 2.5 foot tall now. You know, I got blades on it, you know, like big, long blades and stuff, you know, so. But it was filling up the pot, and I figured I'd ask and see if what I do to separate that or whatever.
Yeah, they're real easy to do. And, the reason why I was asking you what kind of container it was in, because when I do things like that, especially things that don't like to be wet, I always encourage people or suggest to people to use clay pots.
Yeah, I've been changing over to clay pots. That's what I've, you know, that's what I want to do right now is I want to separate this thing and put it in two clay pots.
Right, right. Nope. Other, it's rather easy to do. Just make sure that you provide for really good drainage. And, Danny, it's easy as one, two, three.
Okay. I just wondered, you know, I just thought maybe you just break it in half or whatever, you know, just break it off or whatever.
But well, you can propagate that way as well. But you, right at the base, when you pull it out of the pot, you'll see how easy it is to pull some of those clumps away. You can tell at the base, you know, you can get like, you know, you talked about how they grow, they're growing upward. There's like a gathering of stems. You might have two or three or four. Just yeah. When you see those little clumps, just break those away and pot those up. Just separate
okay,
them.
Okay. That's what I was wondering because I've never separated one before. And, you know, I didn't know how to do it and stuff. So I just thought I'd ask.
It's one of the easiest. No, you'll find it very easy, and have fun. Give some away to some friends.
Yeah, be around I probably will. Well, that's where I got it. So, you know, somebody gave me a piece of one, and it's been growing ever since. So,
right.
You know, I hope you enjoy those pictures.
I do. No, I always like the commode, and I like the little rain gauge the duck's holding. So.
Yeah, that's my quacky duck rain gauge.
Yeah.
And did you see the bee?
Did I see the bee in that photo?
Well, she should have sent you a photo of my 3B garden. It's in full bloom right now, and there's bees all over it and stuff. So
yeah, I couldn't see the bees. I couldn't enlarge it, but I saw the garden. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Good pollination right there.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure hearing from you, Denny.
All right. I'll be talking at you.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I have to pause for a moment when we come back.
Well, we'll finish up because I want to talk about the life cycle, understanding the life cycle of weeds. And I just want to throw that out there as we turn into the month of August, because the month of August is when you want to get everything into play and planned out to turn a corner and be ready to sow grass seed if you need to and if you need to do any lawn renovation.
We'll be right back. Back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, can talk a little bit about a few weeds because they can be such a pain in the. What do you got in mind here, Tony?
In the derriere, right? Absolutely. You know, I think one of the most important things that you can do when we talk about various weeds and so forth, they can be broadleaf weeds, they could be grassy weeds. You know, mm-hmm. grassy weed would be something like nutsedge, you know, crabgrass, things like that. What is a weed? You know, and it's really defined as a plant out of place or something that's growing where it's not desired to be, you know, from your standpoint. So really, you know, it's something you don't want can really be considered a weed if it's bothersome. You know, and the thing about weeds, especially in a turf and even in your landscape beds, even around perennials, even around your annuals and so forth, you know, here's what weeds do. I mean, they compete for light. You know, when they're growing in and amongst various things that you want to take care of and you want in play, they compete for water, soil nutrients, and space. You know, so that's why when we talk about weeds, you know, that's what they're doing. So they're really invading the space of what we really want to grow and try and keep around and looking nice.
Right.
So, you know, when it comes to weeds, you know, that's where it is. And you know, one of the most important things that you can do is learn about its life cycle as you want to go after it and how you want to take care of it and what products you really want to use to take care of eradicating weeds. And, you know, weeds are kind of classified as annual weeds, biennial weeds, and perennial weeds. So an annual weed is really one that reproduces by seed and they complete their life cycle just like annuals do in 1 year. Okay. And when we talk about that, we talk about annual bluegrass. We talk about henbit, chickweed, things like that. You know, they're in abundance in the spring. You know, that purple dead nettle that you like and that we talk about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bittercress. Those are guys that are in abundance during the springtime. They just all of a sudden they explode and they put on this tremendous amount of growth. And then what they're genetically supposed to do is, you know, produce seed later as it blooms for the next generation. And that happens so quickly and rapidly. And then all of a sudden, as we warm up and get into the summer months, they die out unless you spray them with a selective herbicide or a non-selective herbicide. So they're completing that life cycle. They're sowing seed. And when we talk about using Dimension again, you know, high yields weed, you know, weed and turf, ornamental grass stopper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about putting that in your landscape beds or even in your lawn if you choose to do so. As long as you have a healthy lawn, that's not a problem. We're trying to prevent some of those weed seeds from germinating later in the season, in the fall. That's when they germinate. So, you know, we have annual weeds. We also have biennial weeds. When we say that, we're talking about weeds that reproduce by seed and typically will complete their life cycle in a 2-year period, hence the name biennial. You know, that could be wild carrots or mustard, you know, things like that, burdock. Those are typically biennial weeds. Okay, so they, again, will reproduce by seed. And typically, after a couple of years, you know, they're not, that particular plant is no longer in play. It's gone. And they're reproducing by seed, and there you have it. And then, we last but not least, what we have are perennial weeds. Typically, perennial weeds will live for 3 or more years and reproduce by seed or, you know, vegetatively, you know, by its root system, its rhizomes, stolons, things like that. It could be bulbs, okay? So typically, perennial weeds are things like, you know, the dandelion would be a great example of a perennial weed. We always talk about dandelions and so forth. Clover is another perennial weed. So these are guys that are, you know, they're staying around or hanging around. They're living for 3 or 4 more years and they're reproducing. So knowing about the weed's life cycle really helps you understand what it is that you need to do to go after it and, you know, eradicate it totally if it's being bothersome in the landscape or in the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, you know, it's, I tell you, they just compete with everything and, you know, they take up space, rob the soil of nutrients around what it is you're trying to keep around and compete for light and water. So, you know, when it comes to getting rid of weeds, you know, that's what you got to take into consideration. And the best way to get rid of weeds is to use a pre-emergent, keeping them from germinating to begin with. When we talk about that with the Fertiloom 3-step program in the spring and March and April, we're preventing weeds from getting into our lawn. And the same way with Dimension in our landscape beds. So now's the time to put down Dimension in your landscape beds.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're going to keep those winter annual weeds from germinating here in the fall and plaguing you in the spring. Now, something that I've seen a lot of in a garden center is I've seen a lot of quack grass. And a lot of times people will confuse quack grass with crabgrass. And they're totally different. They look very similar. And probably quackgrass gets upset when you confuse it with crabgrass. Doesn't like being confused or mistaken. it stands on its own, okay? Mm. And unfortunately, quackgrass, you know, there isn't anything selective that you can really use on it effectively. You have to kill it with glyphosate.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, and it's in the lawn, you're going to obviously have to get rid of some of the turf around it. Quackgrass looks a lot like crabgrass, but it doesn't have the fine hairs on it. It's relatively smooth. The leaf is a little bit ribbed. And I've seen a lot of that this past week or two, people bring it into the garden center and thinking that it's crabgrass and are picking up, you know, a crabgrass killer type of product. And I'm like, let's put the brakes on there. You know, I don't want you to purchase this because it's not going to be effective in getting rid of your problem. You're going to have to use this. So, you know, understanding things like that is so, so important. You know, we're talking about different grassy weeds right now. Right now, a lot of people are being plagued with nutsedge. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've been pretty good. I've been clear of it. You know, it had taken me a few years to get rid of it in various places in my lawn. I see it a lot of times where people just let it go. It goes to seed, and there you go. It's on its way. It's reproducing somewhere else and all in time. Wind blown, there it is. But you have those little bulbs underground that, you know, that's one of those things. When you go after it, you're killing the main plant, what's up on top of the nutsedge. But it's those little bulbs underground that's in the root system that are coming up this in subsequent.
And your first
years.
Instinct is to reach down and grab it and pull it out.
No, you don't want to do that.
Don't do that.
No. You don't want to do that. It just kind of spreads. It festers and it makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
So, You know, are you pretty good on nuts, Edge? You know, I never hear you talk about it.
No, I really remember earlier in the spring you advised me to start taking care of some things. And
I always give you advice. You know, I put on my white coat. I get the stethoscope out. I get out my plant prescription
pad. Here's what you're doing wrong. Here's what you're doing right.
You got it all wrong, sir.
Yeah. Over the last year or so, we've been applying the things that you tell me, even some of the ones you tell me, over and over again. But we're having some success.
That's par for the course.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's par for the course.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. You have to pause for a moment, and when we come back.
You know what? Let's turn it up, the heat. Let's talk about a little bit of grilling, because I've done a lot of that in recent weeks, and I also want to touch base on our cantina wall with the clipboards, because that's so clever, and I just want to talk about it.
Okay, we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking about a lot of different things this morning. It's going to be a beautiful weekend. Temperatures hovering in the low 80s, very low humidity, no real threat of rain until late Monday, I think, and Tuesday, which is great. If you got some things going on outside, get them done.
Oh, absolutely. It's been so pleasant out, and it makes getting out into the garden and into the landscape a lot more pleasing.
Yes,
for sure.
It does.
You know,
that it does.
You know, other than that, you know, working up a good sweat's not a bad thing either, Ernie. We got to get those toxins out of our bodies.
That's
you know?
Right.
Drink
That's
a lot
right.
of water when you're doing that. So, and stay hydrated. That's for sure. But I've been doing a lot of grilling lately. I don't know if you have been or not.
Well, I have to brag on myself just a little bit.
Most definitely. I insist.
One of the things you'll see in the picture when you get onto our Facebook page, we were talking about the grass, is the grill. And you remember when we had our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats over for our little cookout at the house, only one side of the grill worked.
Oh, I know. I know that all too well.
So it was about ready to go to the curb. And I told Lisa, I said, well, I did a little poking around online, and you can get those replacement parts. So that's what we tackled the other day. We ordered the parts, they showed up at the house, and we took the grill apart and successfully replaced the burners.
You the man.
Yes. Yeah. It was a joint effort. Don't get me wrong.
Attaboy.
Yeah. So now it's ready to go.
You get an attaboy for that. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, that was a little difficult.
to say the least.
We're with Paul Rice and David Kegley from Bluegrass Quality Meats, and I'm working on that broken down grill.
Yep.
I'm like, you know, this is a little difficult there. Ernie, how did you do this? But yeah, I've been doing a lot of grilling, and I have to tell you something, and I might have to post this on Facebook, but I love pork chops.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially the bone-in pork chops.
Yes.
There's something about the bone-in that just really holds that flavor. You know, stays juicy. Doesn't get overcooked. Don't overcook a pork chop.
Mm-mm.
Nothing worse. I mean, that's like, you realize they're chewing on a tire. I mean, it's just rubbery. Like, but here's the key that I found out. I have this brine recipe, and it's a bourbon vanilla brine.
Okay.
And what I'll do, I will put together this brine and just let my pork chops marinate in it. Okay? All you're going to use is kosher sea salt, or just kosher salt, I should say, and a quarter cup of bourbon. Who doesn't like bourbon? Don't use your good bourbon. You know,
no?
Like, keep your Woodford Reserve. You know, like, use Old Overholt or maybe Old
Yellowstone.
Forester. Anything, just to get that bourbon.
Use the cooking bourbon.
That's right. And, you know, a little bit of brown sugar, a little bit of molasses, and pure vanilla extract. And just let them sit in there, and at least for 3 to 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it overnight before, but you talk about retaining and keeping those juices and moisture within. That's where it starts right there. And then you can come up with any type of spice rub that you want to put on your on your pork chop. Or you can barbecue it if you choose to do so. But you'll get that really good juicy tenderness, that flavor inside that pork chop. I'm telling you.
My mouth is watering now.
It was over the top big time. And something else I got to point out to you. I love scallops on the grill, especially. Last week I did, we did some scallops, but I also did, I love salmon. I did a little blackened halibut. But I got to tell you about this this roumelade sauce that I made. And I have to change up the recipe a little bit because it calls for using a relish, a sweet relish with it. And I don't, are you familiar with Wickles pickles?
No, I'm not a pickle guy.
That is, I love Wickles pickles. Kind of a real mild, kind of a sweet taste at first, but then it kind of just heats up ever so slightly on the taste buds, and they're to die for. I can eat a little jar of those in a sitting.
Yeah.
I love pickles. You know, I like pickle juice too, so I'm not going to go there. I don't know what it is about pickles, but I found those to work really well instead of the sweet relish. But just, you know, this is real simple. And I don't know, do you like capers?
No.
You're kidding me.
No. We had some of those when we were in Scotland a couple of years ago. And, not a fan.
You don't have any capers at all.
No.
Ah. You didn't get that. Okay. Real simple to make, and I'll tell you what, you just ladle this over your scallops or your salmon. I like sauces, and I think they add a great deal of value and just bring and enhance the flavor, whatever it is you're cooking on the grill. But a little bit of mayo, capers, and you can use a sweet pickle relish with this recipe. Or, like I said, I like Wickles. Yeah. It adds a little flavor to it. Now, here's what I've really come to like, you know, and this is stuff that I grow in the herb garden. I love tarragon. And I like to take tarragon and let it seep in, like, vinegars and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about a really kind of a it's a different taste. It's a good flavor. It's kind of bold in a way. A little of a licorice element to it. It's not overly strong, but I'll take fresh tarragon, chop it up, and put it in this recipe. Shallots, you know, chop those up finely. And then I'll use any type of, it could be a white vinegar or a champagne vinegar, and I'll seep that with the tarragon after I cut it up finely. And a little bit of Dijon mustard and a little pinch of paprika to give it that reddish tinge color, and you're in business. Huh? That's a good roumelade sauce right there.
Wow.
And it's real easy to make.
Yeah.
And I like grilling. We need to get the guys in here from Bromwell's again. You know, get Chris Waters in here and start talking about the green egg and various things, you know, just things that get your mouth watering. I love to grill out. So, and, you know, I'll throw things together in different recipes, but I'll follow a lot of recipes. And, you know, your taste buds are different. You tweak it a little bit. And I like to do that. That makes me, and sit out on a deck with a good Manhattan and a cigar.
Good Manhattan and a cigar.
Yeah, and you're in business. You're in business. But before, if we're going into the break, I want to talk about this and point this out. Check out our Facebook page. I published some photographs this morning, and I love working here. Although I'm only here once a week, that's probably why. No, I'm just kidding you. But everybody's been so good to me, and recently, the staff has introduced something new in the cantina area, and it's the cantina clipboard. And it was introduced, I think, in May, and it started out with employee photos with their mom for Mother's Day, and it went on into June. The same was done for Father's Day, and now there are employee recipes for tasty summer dishes. And I pulled a couple of off of there. And I did one of those broccoli salad recipes from Heather Rausch. We'll talk about that when we come back.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Been covering a lot of ground this morning. Going to be a beautiful weekend. Temperatures in the low to mid 80s, low humidity, lots of sunshine, no real threat of rain until late Monday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday is we're going to have some really good chances of rain. But we've also been talking a little bit about some of the things that happened around our house, Lisa and I's house. We did some repair on some grass. Had tremendous success, even though, you know, it was middle of summer. Tony had us walking the fine line, and we had tremendous success there. But also, we started a little bit of a garden. And I have my wife Lisa on the line now, Tony, because you had some questions about the garden.
Oh,
and I can't answer them.
You morning, can't Lisa. Answer. Lisa, morning. You want to co-host the show with me from this point forth?
I would, but I've got the grandkids.
How's it coming along?
It's going great.
Good.
Awesome. The last good soaking rain we had just doubled the garden.
You know, it really does. It's amazing what just when you get a natural rainfall does versus just using tap water or, you know, water out of the spigot. I can't explain that, but all of a sudden things just take off and just, you know, they just burst outward and you know, put on this phenomenal growth.
He was asking what all you have in there, honey, and I can't remember any of it.
Oh, okay.
other than tomatoes.
Well, there are the tomatoes. There's 12 tomato plants. And then two sweet red bell peppers, radishes, beets, peas, green beans, turnips, four hills of potatoes, peas, and, of course, pumpkins for the grandkids.
Oh, they always like pumpkins.
Oh, yeah.
The big jack-o'-lantern, that's not far away either. So that gets quite big.
That's what I planted, the jack-o'-lantern.
Yeah. Is that plant pretty good size right now?
It's getting there. It's full of blooms.
Yeah, they're starting to come on. Usually you plant those in June. A lot of people plant those in June and grow that big pumpkin. That's it. What was that? The big pumpkin that they waited on? The great pumpkin. Charlie Brown.
The great pumpkin. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you're going to do a lot of canning. And when you do, just send some of that stuff into the studio with Ernie.
Especially
the sauerkraut.
I have bad news for you. I broke that large glass container that she sent the sauerkraut to you, so you'll get a couple of smaller
ones. You're like a bowl in a china shop.
That's what I call him, Tony. My bowl in the china shop.
Oh, man.
If it can be broken, Ernie Brown will break it.
I'm either the 340 toddler or I'm the bull in the china shop.
Yeah. Well, that's good that your garden's coming along. That's awesome. You know, and I'll be expecting some salsa or some various things, or I'll stop out. We'll grill out sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I wanted to add one thing also. My garden is all completely organic. Organic seeds, organic plants, and organic fertilizer.
Nice. There you go.
I was telling Tony that we successfully repaired the broken burners on the grill the other day, and he said, well, great, I'll have to come out and do a little grilling. And I said, well, I'll tell you who's in charge of the grill is not me, it's Lisa.
How did you go without the burners being in play? That's a necessity.
what we were doing was using the last two burners. It did work.
We got our money's worth out of that.
On the other side, the indirect grilling method comes into play.
Yes.
Lisa, have a great weekend.
All right.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, you know, so now you have an idea of what all's in the garden.
Well, I wish I would have thought that you would have known what was in there.
Well, all I was in charge of, Adam came over and dug it up and tilled probably 60% of it, and then I tilled the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lisa, the barefoot hillbilly farm girl I married out there on her hands and knees, pulling all the little clumps of grass and stuff out of it. And then
she's the worker bee.
Yeah, she is. And then I tilled it again when she got ready, and it was a fine
nice soil.
Yeah. Oh, it was so wonderful.
You know, you just brought something up that what we're going to have to do, I have to find this too. We're going to have to get a couple of people in here, some of our peers in the industry, and if at all possible, David Kester. You're talking about soil. And I have a couple of articles that I have found to be very, very interesting. And it's the myth of soil amendments. And we always talk about amending the soil with various things like peat moss, pine fines, and all that good stuff.
Right.
There's been a couple of people out there to say, when transplanting trees or shrubs or planting various things, it's a myth that you have to amend the soil when you backfill in after planting. Now, I find that to be very interesting. I think that would be a great panel discussion. And what they're saying is it's just a garden myth. The truth about gardening, soil amendments, don't do that before planting.
Huh.
I have to say I disagree. with that.
Now, let me just tell you what we did is we tilled it over and let it dry for a day or so. Came back, tilled it again, let it set for a day or two, tilled it a third time until we get that really nice, fine soil where you could just pull it over with your hand and put a seed in.
Right. Well, this is, you know, even what you're talking about there with tilling, and I know that's been common practice for a number of years, that too has been questioned. That is it necessary to till? And what we're doing is, according to some, as we're disturbing that living community in the upper portion of the soil.
Well, the robins had a field day once we turned it over because they were picking worms out of there like nobody's business.
Right. So
hold that thought.
Yeah, I think what we're going to have to do is get like Jim Montag in here, Bob Bard, David Kester. We need to get a group of people and just have a panel discussion about, do we feel that it's really important to amend the soil, or is it really true that it's not necessary to do that?
Right.
And I'm really on the fence about it because I know there's a lot of acid-loving plants that we plant that just flat out do not do well in heavy clay soils.
Right.
So that's why I differ with that.
7.9 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I have to go into a break, Tony, but we have Doug and Marcus on the line. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about tree bark and grilling. And I think that's Marcus Carey, my friend down there, about organic gardening. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Doug on the line who wants to talk a little bit about tree bark and grilling. So I understand now from our producer, John, Doug, that you can use tree bark for grilling. Is that correct? You there, Doug? Did we lose you, Doug? Okay. Sorry. Call us back, Doug, if you get a chance. Well, we're going to go to my friend Marcus Carey, Tony, who is on the line. And Marcus, I got to tell you, I watched your Facebook segment a few minutes ago with Steepleview Farms and about the tomato plants. And I want to tell you, I appreciate you calling in because we just touched on a subject that you and I discussed when I was visiting with you not long ago about organic gardening and soil. How are you doing today, Mark? Marcus?
Yeah. There?
Are you there?
Doug's here.
Yeah.
This is Doug.
Hey, this is Doug. I think you thought you lost me, but let me tell you a quick tip about shaggy bark hickory.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, shag bark, yeah.
Yeah, it's in everybody's backyard darn near. Anyhow, Tony, this is Doug, Jeff's dad, Doug, heading down to the farm.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, and Doug.
I'm listening to you guys about grilling, and shaggy bark trees are dangling there everywhere, and it's got the highest concentration of the hickory flavor is in that shaggy bark itself, and you can peel a little piece of that off, and particularly people grilling with like the green egg and the wood charcoal kind of grills, you throw that in there and you can get a lot of flavor off of a little tiny piece of bark
that, right,
you
know, right, you have to pay for the good smoky flavor.
Yeah So anyway, wanted to throw that out. I always enjoy your show.
Oh, well, thanks, Doug. I appreciate that. Yeah, I love that. When you start seeing that smoke billow out of the grill, you know it's doing its job. It's like, oh, yeah, you're going to get that good smoky flavor in there, Ernie.
Yeah, so most people, there's shaggy bark all around, and you can walk back in just about any woods and peel a little piece of that off there without hurting the tree at all.
Nice. All right, Doug, have a good weekend. Thank you for sharing.
Appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
All right, Tony, now we have my friend Marcus Carey on the line. And Marcus, thanks for calling us back. Sorry we lost you there for a minute. But I was watching your piece that you posted on Facebook about tomatoes, and we're going to come back to that. But I'm hoping you called because we were talking about gardening and organic gardening.
That's exactly right. And I got to tell you, on this dewy morning, it's great to hear your melodious tones, but even better to hear Mama's lilting voice.
Yeah.
I'm still listening. It's
she
nice
is.
To hear her again. I just wanted to talk with you. You know, I heard you guys talking about your backyard garden, and it's probably a better idea that you stay out of it. I understand her idea.
You know me too well.
But, you know, there's something I think that a lot of folks are going to be facing over the next few weeks because we had all this rain, and now we're going to head back into a hot, humid area. And there's a couple of diseases that organic farmers are going to face. You know, the guys that are out there spreading chemicals, they combat the diseases on the plants. They make them, repel the diseases. They don't cure them. But for organic farmers, you know, we're kind of at the mercy of nature. So a couple tips, couple things people need to be watching out for You're going to start seeing some browning leaves on the bottom of your tomato plants. Could be a couple of different funguses, a couple of different diseases, but there's a real nice, simple, organic solution to it. A couple tablespoons of baking soda in a handheld pump sprayer mixed with water. Rainwater's great. I heard you guys talking about that.
Yep.
Or tap water's fine. And soak your leaves. Baking soda not only kills fungal and bacterial spores that land on the leaves and infect your whole plant, but actually give them a little bit of help in fighting off diseases that come in after you're done.
Awesome. That's a great tip. I appreciate that.
Well, it's that time of year when people are going to be facing these things. And, you know, a lot of folks haven't had time to sit down at the Internet, the greatest lending library in the world, and learn about all this stuff.
Right.
But just one little tip, maybe it'll keep, besides keeping you out of the garden, maybe it'll help keep some of the funguses out of your tomato plants.
Marcus, do you, a couple of things here. I want to ask you about soil. Are you familiar with a book called Teeming with Microbes by chance?
Oh, absolutely.
That's a very technical, great book. And my question, Ernie and I were talking briefly about rototilling. And, you know, that's been common practice for a number of years, for a long, long time. And now there's some, you know, speculation and belief like, hey, are we destroying that community that lives in the top layer of the soil? You know, all the microbes and the arthropods and all those things, there's various things that all get along with one another. Do you rototill yourself, or what's your method? What do you do?
I do, but I am working one patch at a time. We have about 2 acres under production, and we have it divided up into 8 patches. And one patch at a time, we are converting over.
Right.
It's a long process. It's actually not something if you're raising a garden in a raised bed or a small area in your backyard, you're going to have a whole lot easier time doing it. When you're doing it on a kind of a commercial basis or on a larger scale,
right,
it's a little bit more difficult. But you're absolutely right. And quite frankly, I'm not sure there's even a debate about it anymore. I think the jury has made their decision. The less you destroy your soil, the less you destroy that top, what we call the growing zone, the better off you're going to be. So long as you're treating it carefully in between, which means you talked about soil amendments. Soil amendments using compost, organic materials, leaf litter. You've got this old method out there called Back to Eden farming. People are using wood chips. People are using mowed grass, old hay, all kinds of things like that. As long as you're using natural products that themselves have not been treated with chemicals,
right,
that might harm those microbes, then you can build the soil up. But, you know, it's a long process, quite frankly. It doesn't happen overnight.
Right, right. So you organically grow exclusively, and I really got a great deal of appreciation for that. And so does Vicky Tewis. You know Vicky Tewis from Thistle Hair?
I sure do. Yeah,
yes.
Sure do.
Her same thought process there. You know, what are some of the things you like to fertilize with, if you don't mind sharing that with us?
Considering the cost of fertilizer, yeah. I like to let God do it, people get a little bit freaked out about fertilizer because particularly people who are very, very devoted to the organic methods.
Right.
But they don't recognize that, you know, fertilizer exists in nature as long as you're using a natural source for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the NPK that you see on a fertilizer bag,
right,
all of those are elements. I mean, those, if you remember your periodic chart from high school,
right,
each one of those had a square on that periodic chart. They're just elements. They're elemental compounds found in nature. Now, if they're byproducts of the petroleum industry, you might want to stay away from that.
Exactly.
But there are a lot of good organic fertilizers out there. If I had my druthers, if I could do it on a scale that we're at, I'd use nothing but organic compost. That would be all I would need, and everything else would
plant,
take care of
itself. Plant with and side dress, correct?
Say it again?
I said, will you plant with it, along with it, and side dress? And, you know,
oh, I would. Yeah. I would plant in 100% compost if I could.
Got it.
In fact, I filled 3 raised beds with compost. They produce the most robust, beautiful, healthiest plants I've got.
Hey, Marcus, can you hang on just a second? We need to pause for a break. We've got a couple of other questions we want to talk
Absolutely.
With you about. We have Marcus Carey on the line from Steepleview Farms. We're going to take a pause, and we'll be right back to discuss a few more things. Thanks, Marcus. Hold on. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Marcus Carey on the line from Steepleview Farms. And Marcus, I'm so glad you called in. I was just, as we get here, did a little show prep and stuff before we went on the air this morning. And on my Facebook feed was your video from the Steepleview Farm, about your tomatoes. And I watched it a couple of times, and I wanted to know if you could share a little more information about a couple of things you were talking about, the tomatoes that are available right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody knows this is what we call mater season.
Yeah.
Everybody's tomatoes are coming on, your neighbors are sharing them with you, and you can pick them up every place. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize, and I have the same issue when people come to the farm to buy produce. They want round and red. I mean, that's exactly what they're looking for, round and red. That's all they look for.
Right.
And they've been conditioned to do that by the grocery stores and the commercial produce chains. But in reality, most of the tomatoes that you buy in a grocery store are picked dead green. I mean, they're green and hard and like a baseball.
Right.
Because they go up conveyor belts. They're dumped into semis. They're trucked to a warehouse. And in order to make them look red, they put them in a room and infuse it with ethylene gas.
Ethylene gas is
a natural product that is given off by tomatoes as they ripen. But the ethylene gas that they apply to them makes them look red because it makes the skin turn red.
Right.
People probably don't know, maybe don't know, some people, I don't want to assume everybody doesn't know this, but tomatoes actually ripen from the inside out.
Okay.
So when you start to see tomatoes showing a little bit of color, that means the ripening process on the inside has made its way to the skin. So when the skin of a tomato is about 10% color, and it might be a red tomato, it might be a yellow tomato, it might be an orange tomato, might even be like some of the ones we raise. We raise an heirloom called a carbon black. If they start to show about 10% color, that's the time to pick it, because then you can put it on your countertop in your house, and at room temperature in a day or two, it's perfectly ready to eat.
Absolutely.
If it's red on the vine, you better eat it by the time you get home, because it's going to split open, the juice is going to run, and it'll be done.
They'll find, that's for sure. Yeah, that's a process there with the ethylene gas. You know, when you harvest your green tomatoes later in the season, you'll put them in an area with you'll slice an apple, so it gives off ethylene to help produce that ripening process.
So the video I was watching too, you were talking about the difference between canning tomatoes and eating tomatoes. Tell me about the canning tomato, because you know my wife Lisa cans a lot, and that just fascinated me.
Well, you know, we used to get demonstrations at farmers markets, and I would pull out an heirloom tomato and show people the difference between that and the hothouse tomatoes that are typically available. But there's another difference between what we call slicers and canning tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And a slicing tomato is filled with juice, and it's flavorful, and it's great on your bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. You know, it looks great on a salad. Beefsteak-type tomatoes. But then if you go to a Roma tomato, you go to a paste tomato, the difference is that inside that tomato, you've got a far smaller seed packet, far less water, and more flesh. They're also kind of pyramidically shaped, so that when you cut the stem end off and you blanch them and the skin gets ready to pop off, you just squeeze it and the tomato pops out. But because the flesh, and we raise Roma 2s, because the flesh of the tomato is so much more robust and you've got less water, you don't have to boil off so much water if you're thickening up a sauce. So if you're going to can tomatoes, my preference, and I think I would recommend to most people, use Roma-type tomatoes, paste tomatoes, or sometimes what they call plum tomatoes.
Great. Hey, give us your contact information. We're going to share this on our Facebook page so that if anybody has any other questions, they can reach right out to you directly.
Well, it's real easy. Steepleviewfarm.net.
Okay.
Steepleviewfarm.net. And we're on Facebook. I think, doesn't Facebook give you an address too?
It does.
At steepleviewfarm.net.
Marcus, thank you so much for taking the time out to call us this morning.
Hey, Ernie, always a pleasure to hear you and talk with you.
All right, brother. Take care.
Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Great to hear from Marcus. And make sure you check out their site. We're going to put that up on our Facebook page so you can connect with them. And, you know, there's a little inside information there goes a long way. And I think that as we have talked many times about people wanting to do their little backyard gardens or raised gardens, it's best to have the right information from the get-go, from the start.
Sure, there's a number of things you got to take into consideration, Ernie, when you're gardening at home, and like your friend Marcus said, you know, either you're going to garden just naturally in the earth itself with what you have to work with, or you want to build raised bed boxes, and that's what I have, and I found that to be a great way to garden, and you know, like your friend Marcus, and many of my friends, you know, when you can control what you're growing and do it in such a way, you know, that there aren't any pesticides or you know, herbicides or anything chemically involved with that whole process, you know, there's a good feeling about that. Now, when you go to the grocery store and you pick up a cucumber and it's real waxy on the outside, you know, hey, that's made to travel. You know, that was either grown in California or wherever, and it's made to travel great distances, and it's supposed to last for a longer amount of time. And, you know, it's amazing. You ever seen that product when you wash off your vegetables and so forth that you buy from the grocery store? It's called Fit.
No.
It's a little spray. Yeah, Tina, no. Tina, my wife, uses it all the time. But, you know, unfortunately, we can't grow cucumbers and tomatoes and everything all season long. We got a window time frame there,
right,
to where we can go out and get that, like your friend Marcus said, mater season, the best of the freshest picked.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's that period of time, you know, when we're in the doldrums of winter. I mean, we can't go out and pick off that vine, unfortunately.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we can only purchase and pick up what's there, and it's obvious it's not the same taste, it's not the same texture. It's none of that. And I think that's where, for me, unlike, you know, some people, like when you grew up, your mom and other people would come over and do a lot of canning. My folks, my parents didn't, but Tina and I will can. We're not faithfully doing it all the time, but there's times we'll do some things with canning. And there's not a better way to preserve and save what you so diligently and worked hard for during the growing season, what you planted and what you sowed and what you harvested, and to have that in the pantry during the winter months is golden. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing like it at all.
You know, you just used a word that I hadn't heard in a long time, a pantry. I don't know how many people have a pantry in their house anymore.
We have a pantry, yeah.
But I can clearly remember my mom and dad's house. As you mentioned, my mom and my sisters would spend countless hours canning, and the pantry would have 10 shelves on it from floor to ceiling, and it would be full of great stuff that we would eat all winter long.
And that was a very inexpensive way to eat well, and to save money on the pocketbook and be, you know, eat healthy too. Mm-hmm. It tasted great.
Right.
And it still does today. I wish more people would do it. I'm starting to see some of the canning supplies out, as a matter of fact, and people promoting it. So that can be a whole nother show in itself. That's certain.
Yep. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment. But Tony, when we come back, we've got Patricia on the line who wants to know about the cicadas. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Patricia on the line from Lawrenceburg, who is awaiting the cicadas. Are you ready for them, or do you have a recipe for cicada stew, or what? What's the deal?
No, I'm just curious to know what year is the big cicada infestation. I think they're called the 17-year cicadas.
Mm-hmm.
I know in the past, if you plant young trees, they can do a lot of damage to them.
You're absolutely right. And you can still see some of that damage today from past years on some trees. And you know what? I really don't know when the next big outbreak is supposed to take place. That would be a question for, I don't want to butcher his name. Is it Dr. Gretzky over at the College of Mount St. Joe that's our cicada expert here in Cincinnati?
I just did a real quick search here, Tony, and it said the last one was here was 2007, but I don't recall that being really huge like it was back in the 80s, 90s. But 2024, Patricia, is when they're projected to come back.
Okay, good. Now, I do have one other question. My zucchini and squash plants look very healthy, and then one day I go to the garden, and all the stems are just laying over on the ground.
They've wilted, just like wilted over and done?
Yep, yep. What caused that?
Probably the squash vine borer. It's a larva. It gets into the stem of it, and it just shuts off all the nutrient flow and water flow. And as a result, you get that rapid wilting look as if it's just collapsed.
Okay, and what can I do about it? What can I prevent it?
Well, sometimes what people will do is they'll use some various products on air to, natural products. You can spray like spinosad, sometimes neem oil, what was the other thing? BT, you know, but, and actually too, some people will use row covers on their various vining, squashes and so forth as they're developing and growing until they start to set bloom. And then I'll take those off so we can get the pollinators to them and, you know, let all that take place. But it can be really troublesome, and you really have to stay on it and pay attention down close to where the stem, where it's planted into the ground. A lot of times you'll see where that starts to occur and happen, and it's the larvae of the moth that gets up in there, and it kind of burrows into the stem. And like I said, it just shuts it down completely. And then all of a sudden, you have this sudden wilt look. It just collapses. And I've heard of people actually, I've not done this, but some people will go out at night with a flashlight and shine it on the stems of their squash vines and so forth. And they see that little shadow in there. They know that the larvae's in there, and they'll stick it with a straight pin and stop it in its tracks. And I've heard some people cutting it out and kind of letting that wound heal back over. I'm not quite sure how well that does that, because I've not done that personally. But, boy, it's one of those things you walk outside and you're like, oh, my gosh, what's happened?
It's
troublesome, that's for sure. But you just got to really be diligent about, you know, your cultural practices. And you'll see that little frass or sometimes where as the bore gets in there, it's evident that some of where it's kind of sawed into the stem, you'll see it just below it. And sometimes, you know, if it's out further, you can cut that part of it off and discard it. But it's just one of those things, you know, using like spinosad or BT, things like that, neem oil is of the essence.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. Thanks so much. 749-B105, hit it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And another great way to stay connected with us is we were talking about our Facebook page and our friends posting on there and posing questions. I did post Marcus Carey's Steepleview Farm link there, so you could go right to his page if you need more information about that. There's also a grilling question there for you, Tony, about the pork chops. Or you were talking about pork chops?
Yeah, Sheila Downs had asked what that brine recipe was for the pork chops. That
you got people's mouth watering.
You know what, I will tell you this. If you marinate it in there for a period of 3 to 4 hours in that brine with the bourbon and vanilla, it's incredible. It really is. And it keeps that juiciness. And here's what else is important. And I now I'm diligent about using a thermometer when I'm cooking on a grill, because sometimes you'll get those hot spots that are hotter than what you think, or those that really truly aren't. And I'll stick that in there and I'll get to that right temperature where I want it to be. And I've had the problem where I try and grill at night and it's dark.
Yeah.
And either I'm overcooking something or I'm undercooking something, and nothing worse than I got that and put it back on the grill. But right now I just go with that instant read thermometer, and it's Johnny on. And actually, what else is very, very important, and I know a lot of people do not have the patience to do this, and I bet you certainly don't, is once you take something off the grill, let's just say something at the medium rare temperature range would be, say, 145, you know, maybe about a 140, you take it off the grill, let it sit, let it rest for 5 minutes on a plate and cover it with foil, and it's still cooking. And it's going to be Johnny on. When you bite into that, you just want juices flowing right down the side. But Sheila, I will post that for you. I'll take a picture of that brine recipe, and I will certainly post that on Facebook for you to pick it. So and tell me what you think. You know, you might want to alter it yourself to some various tastings of you know, what you prefer. But, hey, that's what recipes are all about. We all have different taste buds.
That's right.
You know, they say people who smoke don't taste things the way other people who smoke do. You ever heard that?
I have heard that.
And I'm not bashing smokers. I like to smell tobacco. So, unlike you, I think. But, yeah, it just, you know, whatever suits your taste buds is really what it's about. And I think, too, when you pair things up with various wines and beers especially, You want to hear something really interesting? I had it was a watermelon salad with a little bit of arugula. Okay, Ernie?
Arugula?
And feta cheese, balsamic vinaigrette mixture. And it paired up so well with an IPA. And you wouldn't think that, but it was lip smacking good. That kind of stuff I enjoy. I'd probably do that a little too much, and that's what happens to me in the midsection.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. But you know what? I do want to give credit and kudos to, we were talking about, I had posted on Facebook, the Cantina clipboard.
Yes.
And on the Cantina clipboards right now are a bunch of tasty recipes. And I don't know if you've picked any off to take home to Lisa by chance or not, but I found that to be so interesting. And I thought, you know, what a clever thing to do in the work environment. And it's something that I haven't seen in a long time, I thought was really a nifty idea.
Mm-hmm.
Nifty. How do you like that word?
I love that word.
But and I can butcher some words, too. I'm here to tell you. But, you know, this was introduced. The Cantina clipboard was introduced after they took down the big poster that everybody got the color in.
Mm-hmm.
That was a neat idea.
Yeah.
And it was done back, I think, introduced in May, where employees posted photographs on the clipboards with their mom for Mother's Day. And even if they were past photos, if mom still wasn't around, there were people who had posted their photograph with mom of the time. And they also did it for Father's Day in the month of June. And now there are recipes on there. And I don't think I have it in front of me, but Heather Roush had a broccoli recipe that was really good. And I told Heather that I would follow up with her and tell her what I thought about it. And she was right. It's delicious and even better after it sits overnight in a refrigerator. You just can't get enough.
Is that right?
And it has bacon in it.
It's one of those things that is great when you first do it, but it's better
right,
when it sits.
Yeah, just all of those flavors get infused up into the broccoli. Now, here's something I want to ask you. I like raw broccoli.
I do too.
Now, you know, there's an element about eating raw vegetables like broccoli, and I think maybe even cauliflower, you know, don't quote me on that, that has an adverse reaction on the goiter, the gland. You ever heard that?
No.
I don't quite understand that, but my wife and I go back and forth, Tina and I. She likes it blanched, which gives it that nice, rich, deep green color when you blanch broccoli.
Right.
I did blanch the broccoli. It didn't say that on her recipe, but I know my wife likes it blanched, so I blanched it for Tina. But it was very good, to say the least. You need to try that.
Okay.
There's also a sweet potato avocado recipe back here for a taco. I like avocado. See, I'm hungry right now.
You spend a lot of time back there. I have to admit, a couple of weeks ago when that went up, and you know, Tony and I always gather here around 4:35 a.m. before the show to talk about some things we're going to discuss. And he walked over to this, goes, well, oh, what is this? And he turned to me and said, oh, you know, it would have been a great idea if they would have printed a lot of these. And then suddenly I hear him go, well, look at that. There's extra ones.
All you have to do is look.
And he started pulling them off of the clipboards one by one and then went out the door after the show with a bunch of new recipes.
I love that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I really do. I don't do enough of it.
Right.
And again, you know, hey, the Bengals just kicked off.
Right.
Right. They're in training camp. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean?
Well, it means that we're going to the Super Bowl this year.
Oh,
and we're going to win it.
There you go. I brought back a ticket for you last year.
That's right.
I knew it wasn't good when I brought it back.
I'm still hopeful. But that means we're on the verge of tailgating season two.
Absolutely.
And our friends from Bluegrass Quality Meats.
And I keep thinking about that jalapeno cheesy Met.
Mm.
You know what? You get a good old Vidalia onion on there and a little bit of relish or some horseradish and doctor that up with some mustard.
Mm. I saw, you remember, it was National Coney Day the other day or something, Chili Dog Day. And I told Lisa, I said, you know what we ought to do is take those Bluegrass Quality Meats jalapeno Mets slice one up and roll it in some pepper jack cheese and put it in not a pie crust, but one of those Pillsbury wrap things, and then bake that. Put a little chili over top of that, bad
like a big,
boy.
A large pig in a blanket?
We call them hogs in a blanket. She makes them for me. And
how many can you do in?
We call them jalapeno hogs in the blanket.
How many can you do in?
Until the package is gone.
Really?
I wasn't kidding when I told David and Paul. I said, you know, when she opens up a package, and I think there's 8 of them in the package or something like that, forget it.
Just sew them together.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a great debate here, and I find this really interesting because chili or cheese coney aficionados here in the area.
Oh yeah,
you know, you got the Skyline group, you have the Gold Star group, and last but not least, well, and it goes beyond that over on the west side of town, you have Dixie Chili,
Empress Chili, used to be Covington Chili, but that's gone now.
And what's the one over in Western Hills? Delhi. Is it Delhi Chili?
Could be.
I'm not sure.
That's what we need to do. We need to do a chili run. Spend all day eating.
Do you have a preference when it comes to that? And I'm going to tell you why I'm asking. It's because I bet you've not done this in a long time. I love it. It's just the novelty of it. The foot-long hot dog.
Oh, okay.
The foot-long now, okay?
Yeah.
And you got to find the buns. Sometimes you'll go to a grocery store, they have the foot-long hot dogs, but they don't have the foot-long buns.
Right.
Or they'll have the foot-long buns, but they won't have the foot-long hot dogs. You got to find the ones that got both.
Yeah.
But, and you know, then you pick up Gold Star or Dixie Chili in the can, or, but does it taste the same? And you can't get the cheese to melt on that. You cannot get the cheese to melt on that bad Oscar like it does when you buy the crate and take it home at 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
And you work on it, and your wife gets up the next day, and Tina will say, "Look like Tony Raccoon was down there last night."
Tony Raccoon.
She calls me Tony Raccoon because I get stuff all over the place.
Oh,
I'm like, you know, Tina, can't you get a plate? No, that's why we got this big counter. That's why we got this big counter.
Yeah.
When we did the kitchen renovation, that was my plate.
Right. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have to pause for a moment. When we come back?
You know what? I'm going to throw this out there because I've had a lot of people come in and ask me about their hydrangeas, and I was just up at the Cultivate show in Columbus. And as a matter of fact, ran into Todd Baton and his wife and his son, who's now working at Willoway Nursery. And that's where a lot of us go from the Cincinnati area to check out what's new for the upcoming 2019 spring season. And I picked up something very interesting from Proven Winners. And it's called, "Why Isn't My Hydrangea Blooming? Hydrangeas Demystified."
Ooh.
Very interesting publication. It'd be nice if we can post this, because this really tells you a lot about, you know, why aren't they blooming? But in the next couple of weeks, given what I just told you, that I took a lot of photographs of some really cool stuff that you're going to see only, for the most part, in your local garden centers and nurseries in 2019 spring.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony has talked himself into a hunger moment. Talking about markets, and then when we went into the break, I told him what one of my favorites was, that I kind of had my favorite little Skyline place there in Crescent Springs whip up, and it was spectacular. And so we've been talking about Tony is so hungry.
Wait a minute. Don't stop there with the story, because you went on to talk about it like you were some big construction worker. And like, "Hey, I need you to build this big frame. And I need we're going to pour the Skyline in it. We're going to layer it with."
Oh, it was awesome.
Tell everybody how you told me.
There happened to be a brief moment there where Skyline offered those andouille sausages, and they had that Skyline dip special on. So I went in, I had this idea. Again, not really sure where this came from. So I asked them to do a little something special, put that Philadelphia cream cheese on first, then put down a little bit of chili, but then put down 3 of those andouille sausages, then covered with jalapeno cheese, then a little more chili. and bring it to me.
Mm-hmm. And then go into cardiac arrest.
Hey, sprinkle right? over a little hot sauce on top of that. My. You talk about delicious.
I'm surprised that you said hot sauce because I don't think I know you like the jalapeno cheese match from Bluegrass Quality Meats, but typically if I'm out with you, it's always garlic parmesan wings.
Yeah, like those two. Hot.
I mean, you just, and I've seen I don't you know get what it all, it I've seen you get it all over you, and you might you might leave with a flat in your in your goatee and not see it. But before we went to the break, all right. Well, let's pause and postpone food.
Quit talking about food for a minute.
I think I'm going to leave here and go over to Finley Market.
I know you are. I've seen that look in your eye.
I did. I brought two bags with me to go shopping over at Finley Market. And if I call the old boy up, I know what he'll tell me. Hey, can you stop at Acker Lines and get me some of that bacon? And get a oh yeah, Pop, I'll stop there. And he likes chicken liver. Are you a chicken liver person?
No.
Huh?
No.
I don't get that. Oh, he's like
Earl.
All over it.
My younger brother Earl and my dad used to eat those all the time. Mom used to have to get extra chicken livers just for those two.
You know, what about the old boy, too? I mean, I know he loves chicken liver. I remember as a kid, and I'm not seeing him do this, but boy, he'd peel back those sardine cans and go at it.
So, my old man would, too. Sardines, mustard, and cracker was his Saturday snack. How about welcome to In and Around the Table with Tony and Ernie?
Well, we've tried to. I've tried to bring that into play. Like, I mean, we've been here since 2011, three or four times.
That's funny.
But,
because we both love food.
I know I do. But anyway, I'm going to go over and see my buddy Phil at Mackey's. Takes care of me. You know, gets me. We need those guys in here to talk about select cuts, what it's all about when it comes to cuts and what you're looking for with various types of ribs, short ribs, meats. I don't know all those ins and outs. And when they tell you you want something with a little bit of marbling in it, that's the white stuff. Everybody wants everything with little fat. And, you know, that marbling's what really flavors it.
Oh, yeah.
And you need that bone-in ribeye. You need that bone keeps it juicy. But anyway, enough of that. Why isn't my hydrangea blooming? Hydrangea's demystified. This is something I need to somehow scan and get out there on Facebook because I thought this was a great way that you can get an abundance of information to someone that they can reference rather quickly, talking about, you know, what type of hydrangea do you really have? A lot of times I'll ask that question to customers when they come into the garden center and they're like, oh, I'm not really sure. And then we have to ask a series of questions. Well, is it usually blue or pink? You know, is it a rounded type of bloom? Is it a lace cap? Is it a what we call a smooth leaf arborescence type of hydrangea, which could be the Annabelle hydrangea or Incredible or Invincible or Invincible, I should say. And I meant to say Incredible, but or is it one of the panicles that we see now a lot of, the ones that kind of like a little bit more sun than the big leaves, you know, but the panicles like Bobo, Little Lime comes to mind, Little Quickfire, Pinky Winky. So all of these hydrangeas have different requirements. And a lot of times, more often than not, and I'm a hydrangea person, and every time I go to the show up here at the Cultivate Show, we get to see all the new varieties that are coming out for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes you get them in a nursery. It's like, man, you guys really need to bloom. You're not looking like what I saw you when I saw you at the show.
Right.
Where are you? What's going on? But a lot of times, you know, with the Macrophyllus, which we also call the big leaf, or even some of the Serratus, the mountain varieties, you know, did you cut it back is going to be the first question. Okay. And if you say yes, then this whole chart takes you to like, oops, you just cut off the flower buds for the following season. And then it takes you down to the bottom and it tells you, you know, you got to wait till next year.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you didn't cut it back, I'm just giving you a little flow chart. This is not a business organizational chart that you'll find in a big corporation, but it kind of looks like that.
Right.
Remember the old flow charts?
I do.
I was always at the bottom. in a category called staff.
Mm.
You always had that window office. And I, you know what? When I first got here, you had that nice side window office that overlooked the part of Reading Road, and you just stuck me in a
corner.
Here's your office, Tony. Then 20 Digital took it away from me.
Then we got moved. We don't have a desk.
I got this little one drawer file cabinet.
That's right. You get one file cabinet.
I tell you what, man. I know they really think highly of you.
That's funny.
I'm going to take out the corporate. Anyway, if you did not cut it back, you know, the question is, how cold is the climate that you live in? You know, we're a zone 6A for most of us. And, you know, is it really cold during the winter months? Has it been a severe winter? And if the answer is yes, then usually the flower buds didn't make it. They didn't. They froze out during the winter months. Or, you know, it might be suggested that you move it to a more of a protected spot or protect that plant with some sort of a barrier around it, you know, to help, you know, preserve those flower buds for the next season, trying to prevent them from freezing out. And, you know, if your climate's relatively decent, you know, you don't always have those really severe, cold, prolonged winters, and you did not cut it back, then you're typically getting too much shade. And we say this all the time. Hydrangeas need some sun. Now, what is the ideal sun for a hydrangea when we talk about a macrophylla? And in my opinion, you know, it's primarily the morning sun up to about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, give or take. Or you might have that situation where you have trees around your home in a landscape where it's kind of like dappled light, dappled sun. You'd be amazed at how well they'll perform when you get a little bit more sun. When they're not blooming, it's either they're in the wrong location, not getting enough light, or two, those bloom buds are freezing out. It was a couple of years ago, my next door neighbor, they have some endless summers, that series of hydrangea planted on the front side. And the winter was so severe that they really didn't come on and get into play with some bloom production or bud production until really late in the season. But the foliage was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I know there are a lot of people out there that can attest to that, who have seen that foliage is beautiful, but yet where are the bloom buds? So if the foliage is beautiful, that's what you want it to look like. But the bloom buds, you know, we need a little bit more oomph from the sun to get that production. And then sometimes if they do freeze back and we're cutting them back a little further in this late winter, early spring, then we're prolonging that show of flowers a little bit later. And that's what a lot of us will experience. I also like to see you fertilize with an acidic type of fertilizer, you know, your hydrangeas, especially the ones that are pH sensitive, to get various color, like the pink or the blue. Sometimes you'll get a little combination of both that might have a little bit of a purplish hue to it. But, you know, fertilize late winter, early spring, and fertilize late in the fall after they drop their foliage. And use something organic. Use something that breaks down slowly, like feeding them well. I do like, when it comes to fertilizing hydrangeas, one of my favorite fertilizers is Aspomus Hollytone. And, you know, that's really good for acidic-loving plants. It's eating well. And your plants will thank you for that. I mean, you know, I'm saying that facetiously, but they'll thank you in such a way that you'll see how well they perform when you use that fertilizer twice a year. And when you fertilize in the fall, again, wait till the foliage falls and drops completely to the ground. Rake that up. Use half of the spring rate in the fall. And I think you'll see a tremendous turnaround or a lot better performance from your hydrangeas, given they have the right amount of sun. Here's what else is very interesting, too. We just came through that ferocious heat wave a few weeks ago. And a lot of people were coming into the garden center like, hey, what's going on with my hydrangeas? It's like they can't get enough water. They're wilting. They really look like they're stressed out. They really look like they're struggling. Well, they are stressed. But a lot of that really has to do with the heat itself. You know, the temperatures. When you're in the 90s, it really isn't comfortable for us, and it certainly isn't comfortable for the hydrangea either. And they'll express that. They'll show you that. You will see those leaves wilt, but I want to caution you about this, especially if we get into another heat spell, which we probably more than likely will, is before you go hog wild watering it too much, pull the mulch back, use your index finger. If it's moist and it's in that wilted stage, guess what? Leave it alone. come back out the next morning after we go through the overnight hours when things cool down, and if that plant's perked up, that's a telltale sign it's heat stress. But hydrangeas, they're my favorites. I have friends in the industry. It's like, oh, gosh, here we go. We got another hydrangea. I can't get the ones that I have to bloom like I want them to bloom. But when you do, there's not a better show on earth than to see the hydrangea when it's in bloom. Yep. And a lot of people are gravitating towards the paniculatus. You know, I'm talking about the paniculatus like Limelight, Little Lime, Quickfire. Those guys will tolerate a lot more sun than the others without having any issues. And I think that it's been a really good replacement for, you're not going to like me when I say this, the knockout rose. You know, the knockouts, I think people, you know, there are those people who have had great success with them. And then, you know, they flourished or they're blooming their heads off. And there are a lot of you who have had some issues with them. And you know what I'm talking about. In some of those cold winters, guess what? The knockout got knocked out. I mean, it was like Muhammad Ali taking it to the canvas for the 10 count. And unfortunately, that's what we've experienced and seen with some of the knockouts. I'm not beating them up by any means.
Right.
But you know what? The paniculata hydrangeas, those are a good alternative for the knockout. You'll get a lot of bang for your buck, that's for sure.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have to pause for a moment. When we come back,
I'm going to tell you about another plant that I saw up at the Cultivate show in Columbus. And it's a tropical, and it will bloom its head off. But this is a little bit different than what you've been accustomed to seeing in the garden center.
We'll be right back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guy. It's going to be a beautiful day to get out and about, get some things done out in the yard, out in your landscape bed, in your garden, and get to your local garden center.
Yeah, you know, it's just the weather has been so pleasant.
And, yeah, very nice.
You know, it's a great time to do just exactly that. And we're not, you know, we're not really far either. I hate to say this, but I mean, the way things just, you know, just roll forward and speed up. I mean, we're not far from knocking on September's door. We got a whole nother month ahead of
Shut
us.
Shut your mouth.
Okay, I'm going to leave, and you can take the rest of the 20 minutes of the show.
So no one wants to think about September yet. You know the thing you were talking about, how fast time flies? Mm-hmm. Can you believe the kids are going to be back in school and in a week or two?
You know, I've been seeing the commercials on TV.
I think that's why it feels like that summer just evaporates right before our eyes. I just sent this message to a friend last night that we just can't slow it down.
No, you can't. It's crazy. And just like my elderlies from years ago would tell me, you wait till you get older, it goes faster and faster and faster. And it really does. And all of a sudden, you look behind you, and you've passed up a lot of stuff.
Next Wednesday is August 1st.
I know.
Let that sit there for a minute.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. You know, and that's really, for me, August is maintenance month. You know, that's when you start really getting ready for the fall.
Mm-hmm.
You start, you're harvesting what you grew in the vegetable garden, you know, now. And by then, you know, you're still working on harvesting things. And actually, hopefully, you're canning some of the things. Mm-hmm. You know, you're... what you've harvested, and you know, even so, take it upon yourself to definitely visit with, go and visit some of the local produce markets. Mm-hmm. You know, the vendors, the guys who actually grow things and take them to the farmers markets. Just the other day, I was over at, Mondays usually, I will make a stop over at Lunkin Airport if I can, and there's always a couple vendors over there on Mondays that I'll pick up some produce from. And, you know, the other day I bought some corn and some various things. Peaches, they were not locally grown, but boy, they were good. It came out of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, everyone talks about the peach truck.
Right.
But the guy's like, he was telling me, they didn't come from here, but we're allowed to sell them. You know, that's one of the few things we're allowed to sell, that although we didn't grow it. He said, but just let them sit on the counter for a couple of days. He said, I guarantee you, you'll be back for more. And I think I'm going to stop back over there Monday. You know,
I'll be back for more.
When you just pull that peach apart with your hands and just pull the seed out and munch on that thing, and it just, the juices are flowing. I love it. But anyway, visit with your local markets. Pick up a lot of really good stuff. And you're supporting local businesses and the economy as well. Stay local. It's what it's all about.
Absolutely.
But before we went into the break, excuse me, I was, it was a little over a week ago. I got to go back and track time. Was up, some of us were up at the Cultivate show in Columbus, and that's where, you know, you'll see a lot of the new plant introductions. And that's what I'm going to be busy on the next week or two, posting on Facebook and showing you what to look for at your local garden centers and nurseries. You know, that's the beauty of it, is that all the garden centers locally here in the tri-state area, we're up there, we're looking for the latest and the greatest and the newest, because we're going to be the first ones to bring it to you versus the big boxes. And a lot of my friends, you know, they're a little hesitant on some of those items. But, hey, I'm always eager and anxious to try new things. And one of those is a tropical plant from Sun Parasol called the Mandevilla. This is a red one. And the beauty of this one, I'm going to post this on Facebook. I don't have it up yet. It comes with variegated foliage versus it just being green. Mm-hmm. It's variegated, meaning it has like light cream colors in with the green leaves on the foliage. And what makes this so attractive in my eyes is that when you see those beautiful, luscious, long, deep red trumpeted blooms, okay? How'd you like that? That was a long adjective.
I love that.
Very descriptive. But with the variegated foliage in the background, this is sure to be a number one seller. There's no doubt in my mind with that variegated foliage, with those deep red trumpeted shaped blooms, that is stunning. And that is a Mandevilla, which will climb. It loves to climb. So when you plant a Mandevilla, give it something to get up on. If not, it's going to flop over. But give it a trellis. Give it some sort of a spiral topiary, something to grow up. And then you can plant other things around it on the outer edge if it's a large enough pot. But this here is sure to be a crowd pleaser. No doubt in my mind. Mm-hmm. That deserves, this particular Mandevilla, in my eyes, deserves a standing ovation. And I know you can't see it right now, but I'll post it. Okay. I'll post it. You know, it's not quick to do those things here. Everyone thinks, oh, they know what they're...
I was going to say, I can help you with that thing you wanted to scan and post. We'll do that in the break. Oh,
that would be perfect.
Yeah.
Well, or we can do it after the show this morning. I don't know how quick you are. I've seen you before.
That I can handle. That I can take care of pretty quickly for you.
I didn't mean to call you out.
No.
You know, we're,
let me have it, and then I will send it to Johnny, and we'll get it posted.
I'll let you have it. But I'm really excited. You know, there's also a Brunera, however you want to say it. Various people say it differently. It's a wonderful perennial, and there's a new one that the leaves are so big on it. It would be stunning. And I'm going to leave that one out there just for you to think about and mull over, because I will post it eventually too. But it's a wonderful perennial for the shade garden. And it has a beautiful deep veining look in the foliage. It's got this silvery, misty look to it on top. It's a wonderful plant. So with the blue bloom, and I have a picture of the leaf of this particular plant, this perennial plant, Brunera or Brunera, however you want to say it. And its leaves are just bigger than my hand.
Wow.
So the beauty of that is, given the size of the foliage, and for me, it's all about foliage too, but yeah, I do like blooms, don't get me wrong. But to see this in a shade garden, I know it's going to light up like nobody's business. You would probably even see it on a night like last night, the full moon.
Right.
If it was right on it, it would show up. Some things will show up in a garden like that are light in colors if you have a full moon. But it will show up in a shade garden and look stunning. So be looking for it on our Facebook page as well.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got to pause for a moment. And when we come back,
we're going to continue gardening.
All right.
Where else are we going to go?
Gardening. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Amber from Anderson on the line, who's got a question about bearded irises. Hi, Amber. How many do you have?
Well, I have a bag full. A guy on next door was giving them away. And at my old house in Blue Ash, I had huge bearded irises from Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And when we moved from my grandmother's house, unfortunately, they went with the house. And I'm looking to start new ones. and they are bright white is what he called them. And mm-hmm. I have about 15 to 20 bulbs.
Okay.
That he has dug up. What time of year do I need to put those in coming up in fall?
Oh, right now.
What do I need to do to keep them alive in the meantime? No, is there anything I need to do?
Yeah, plant them now. Right now is ideal, especially if people who have bearded irises or dividing irises. You can divide irises, the bearded irises, after they finish flowering up until August.
Okay.
And actually, do they still have long fans on them?
He cut the fans off probably about 6 inches.
They're six inches above the tuber? Tall. Yeah.
Yes.
Perfect. Yeah, they're ready to plant. Go ahead and get them in the ground.
Okay, fabulous. And I also was hearing you guys talk about the hydrangea.
Uh-huh.
I had a beautiful, it was called a strawberry shortcake. I'm not quite sure of the different varieties.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys still have those? Are they available? Because I've looked around to plant a new one. And I can't find it anywhere.
You know
and
what?
It was gorgeous.
I usually you can find them at your local garden centers and nurseries. A lot of people aren't familiar with those, especially in the box stores. But you have strawberry short. I might have some at our garden center. I'm not sure. Who are you close to, by the way? Garden center.
I'm out right off of Mount Carmel Tabasco. So right between 32 and 125.
You might try. Are you pretty close to Bard's?
Okay.
It sounds like you are. And I'm not. I apologize. I don't know a lot about Ohio and state routes and various things. That's why I always ask, you know, of a garden center when I'm.
Yeah, like the Eastgate area. By Eastgate Mall.
Yeah, you know, I would try Burger Farm.
Okay.
Barge Nursery or Plants by Wolfangle. I would start with those three. And what I will do, I know that I had some in the nursery, but I'd rather you look there first. And if push comes to shove, you know, I can contact you and just let you know I have one.
Okay.
You know, I want you to support those locally to you first. But if they don't have them, you can give me a call at Jackson Florist and Garden Center. I did have some, but I can't tell you if they're still there.
Okay, fabulous. Thank you guys so much. Have a great day.
One last thing I want to point out with you on the bearded irises.
Yes.
Once they get established and you go forward a couple of seasons, make sure you always keep all any loose leaf debris and litter up away from it at the end of the season around the base of them because that is a place where a lot of the borers will winter over. And actually, I don't know if you're familiar with the bearded iris borer, but it will go up the stem and come right down through it, and it eats away at the fleshy tuberous root, and it gets real mushy, and that's usually a result of the borer.
Yeah, I know I'm dealing very heavily right now with mold in our area, and they are just destroying my flower beds. And then I've noticed, like, some ornamental grasses that have really kind of taken a hit this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing from, we've had several mole people out, and they're saying there's not a whole lot we can do because those 17-year cicadas are coming very soon, and basically the moles are just gorging on their larvae right now.
That was the question we had earlier in the show.
Yeah. We had somebody else ask us about the cicadas and did a quick little Google search. They're not due back for a couple of years, but that doesn't mean that they're not already in the ground, larvae.
Right. And everything has that cyclical approach. And, I guess the populations increase when they're ready to come out. So, well, good luck to you. And let us know. And if you don't find the strawberry shortcake, feel free to give me a call.
Yeah, we'd love to have you post some pictures so we can watch the progress along the way.
I tell you what, Bob just texted me. He has strawberry sundae and vanilla strawberry. Both are beautiful.
At Bard's.
Now, is the vanilla strawberry, is that the one that goes white to light pink to dark pink? Because that's what mine does.
Yeah, it gets it. Yeah.
And that, because that's the one mine, and it has grown gangbusters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is literally almost 6 foot around. I mean, it is massive. And it has so many blooms on it. Like, the rest of the hydrangea in the neighborhood aren't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just dripping full with blooms.
I like that. Dripping full.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, that's literally what it looks like. I mean, it is so heavy with blooms. I mean, I actually was able to cut some off, take some inside, and it didn't even look like I had taken any.
Touched it, right?
So,
I love it.
So,
yeah, you're right on. Yeah, he has, like I said, strawberry sundae and vanilla strawberry. They're all very
wonderful.
They're all very similar.
It's Bob at Bard's Nursery.
Right. Okay.
Okay, fabulous. Thank you guys so much. You have a wonderful day.
You do the same. Bye.
Bye-bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Boy, that conversation made me hungry to go to the ice cream store.
Yeah. Oh, you know, that's another
food today.
That is, actually, that's on that thing. Did you scan that while we were in the break?
I did not. Didn't have time.
Well, I can do that lickety-split. I told you, don't go there.
Yep. But we'll get this up in the next day or two.
It's a beautiful hydrangea, and as she just explained, when it starts to bloom, as it starts to flush out, they're white and they just gradually turn as pinkish. Then they go to the strawberryish, like fuchsia color.
Gotcha.
And they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, what'd she say? It was dripping with blooms.
Dripping with blooms.
And there you go. You take those, put them on a table as cuts, and you're not missing a beat.
Wow.
Perfect.
Very, very nice.
I like that kind of gardening.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. And you know, I wish more people would do that, not be apprehensive about cutting things from things that grow in her garden,
mm-hmm.
and put them on a table.
Right. Yeah, and it was wonderful to have Bob respond right away so that we can...
Bob's always listening.
Actually, but to get that info to her right away.
I don't know if... I know that we're trying to coordinate a golf thing next Wednesday. If you can manage to talk to Grover and get off, you know, tell him you'll be on your best behavior, that you're...
Well, I don't want to lie to him right away. If I'm going to be with you, there's danger in the air.
You're networking is what I'm calling it. I'm introducing you to people in the industry.
Okay.
But Brian Schlimmer, a good friend of ours, and Bob Bard. And by the way, Brian Schlimmer's doing well. He just recently received a new kidney, and that is great news. And if you don't know Brian Schlimmer, great guy, formerly with Cisco, but Brian Schlimmer and Bob Bard and myself, I don't know if there's a fourth yet. I'd have to check with Bob. But like to have you, fat man.
Love to be there.
I'll get some extra weights to put on my side of the cart.
Well,
there I go, hammering on you again about that.
Everybody kind of poked fun at Keith Hollingsworth and I when we rode the cart because he's a big man, too. And it struggled toward the end of the 18, that's for sure.
That's what you said. You said it was a tough go. Yeah. You didn't take it up any steep hills, did you?
No. One of us had to get out and walk. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Been great talking with you this morning. We'll be back next week. Get out to your local garden center. Get outside. Get in the lawn. Get in your yard.
Get dirty.
Enjoy the weekend. Get dirty.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.
Imagine a beautiful afternoon. The sun is shining and you get to enjoy it all because you just sat down on your John Deere mower. The smooth ride lets you escape into your yard. Intuitive controls make you feel like you're one with the machine. And with attachments for every season, you can enjoy it all year long. We could keep trying to put you in the moment, but to really understand what it's like to drive a John Deere mower, you just have to get in the seat. Learn more at johndeere.com/get in the seat or visit a dealer near you.